Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
She's my friends, but I'm in France. I'm just saying.
Our next story takes us to France. Last fall, President Emmanuel Macron announced a program to try to cut high unemployment among young people in heavily immigrant neighborhoods. He said the idea would be to pay bonuses to companies that hire people from designated areas.
On aide les personnes et on les aide pour être mobiles, pour aller réussir dans leur quartier ou ailleurs, mais accéder à un emploi stable.
Macron said this would help people access staple jobs and succeed, whether in their neighborhoods or outside of them. The fact that the program is structured around neighborhoods is a very French approach to what we think of as race-based affirmative action here in the U.S. And as Emma Jacobs reports, it's also an attempt to address a big taboo in the world of French statistics.
Awa Tamara is 26. She works in corporate recruiting. And her last job involved narrowing down lists of candidates for clients. Typical stuff. But she recalls one time when a client openly rejected applicants based on their ethnic background.
Where the manager said, I don't want black or big people. We were hurt.
Tamara was born and raised in France. Her parents are from Senegal.
I really had tears that were going up because when it's done to people of color, it's like it's done to you. And you think that people don't like you to the point they don't want you to have a job that you deserve.
Now, the fact that discrimination goes on in France did not shock her. It was hearing it stated so explicitly.
It's really hard to put a finger on racism because it's really subtil.
Subtle. Nicolas Abdelaziz's job is to make discrimination more visible. Abdelaziz has an app on his phone that allows him to receive calls for about a dozen different numbers.
Qui nous permettent d'avoir sur un même téléphone plusieurs numéros.
He sends all the calls to voicemail.
Avec un répondeur, généralement il laisse un message.
Because each of the numbers belongs to a fictitious candidate for a job, for an apartment, whatever subject Abdelaziz is looking into. All he really wants to see is the number of callbacks each candidate gets. Abdelaziz works for one of France's most well-known anti-racism organizations, SOS Racisme. And he uses a method of measuring discrimination the French call...
Le testing.
Le testing. So to look at hiring, for example, Abdelaziz sends out resumes.
Donc les deux sont identiques. Seule différence, c'est la consonance.
Two identical resumes, he says. The only difference is the person's name and what it suggests about their origin. For instance, a North or West African name versus an old French surname. If they get called back at different rates.
C'est discriminatoire, puisqu'en fait, à valeur égale et à compétence égale, il y a une différence de traitement qui ne peut être motivée que par l'origine.
Given the candidates have the same qualifications, the only reason can be their background, he says. Testing has been the primary tool in France for decades to document racial disparities.
This is a very powerful tool to prove the existence of discrimination. The problem is that it doesn't go further than that.
Demographer Patrick Simon is one of a few French researchers who say to understand the bigger impacts of discrimination, the country needs to reconsider restrictions on the collection of ethnic statistics.
The notion of ethnicity, which I say in English, is not easy to translate in French.
Simon explains that in the past 50 years or so, France has taken the approach of de-emphasizing racial categories. Post-World War II, post-decolonization, a lot of people don't want the government to have lists of people and their origins or religion. Researchers like Simon can use proxies, like place or birth of your parents, but he argues collecting comprehensive statistics would make for more effective anti-discrimination policies.
Yeah. I don't know, but...
The thing is, as Awa Timera will attest, this taboo is deeply embedded in French culture. She has worked in the UK and describes the first time she had to fill out a detailed form that asked her to identify her race.
You have so many boxes and you have to check what is your background. And basically, it was unsettling for me because you have a box that says African. And I was started to wonder, basically, my parents, they were born in Africa, but I was born in France. So should I say that I'm black African or I don't know. It's really weird. It's hard to be like, okay, if I take that, I will only be that because I'm so much more than that.
Tamara would like to see more opportunities for people with immigrant backgrounds, but she is conflicted about what steps France should take to get there. For the world, Emma Jacobs, Paris. World nigga law.
What they find is right, what they find is wrong
It would be great tonight if Chief King had as many people pulling for him as he does against him, but I'm here to tell him that I'm against him.
I have never been spoken to by someone in authority like I was spoken to by Tony King.
I can file a lawsuit, or I can ask the council to do the right thing and leave my faith into you.
Allegations of sending sexually explicit photos to an officer. New details tonight on the controversy within the new Boston, Texas Police Department. We first broke last night at 6 and 10. Serious allegations being made against the chief of police. Well, today, the attorney for that police lieutenant fired by police chief Tony King in early March gave KSLA News 12 a look at graphic images he claims the chief texted his client, just one of many accusations being launched against the chief. KSLA News 12 chief investigative reporter Stacey Cameron first broke news of these allegations from last night's city council meeting. And today you've been digging more into these accusations. Joins us live from just outside New Boston Police Headquarters. Stacey.
Well, that's right, Doug. Last night the city council said they are going to start preparing to ask Texas Rangers to come here to New Boston and fully investigate the police department as well as Chief King. You mentioned that lawyer. Well, we talked to him earlier today. His name's Butch Dunbar, and he said there's no word right now on when that investigation could possibly happen, but the lieutenant that he represents has been reinstated with back pay. That lieutenant was fired back in March for threatening to expose alleged misconduct by Chief King. He says the lawyer will not file suit now because his client has been reinstated, but with Butch Dunbar saying he's pleased that his client's back on the force and that city leaders want a full and fair investigation by an outside agency. Dunbar says city council should have been more aggressive last night and taken disciplinary action against Chief King during the city council meeting.
Disappointed that they didn't suspend the chief. There's enough credible allegations out there, from the false arrest to striking another officer to the sexually graphic pictures he sent.
And here are those alleged pictures right now that Chief King sent to Millwood by text message. According to Dunbar, we've taken care to edit the image because the photo is sexually graphic. Millwood, according to Dunbar, was disgusted and felt awkward that his boss, the chief of police, sent it to him. I went to the New Boston Police Department today to try and speak with King about the allegations and the text picture. He was not in the office. They told me he went home early and he's not returned the message that I left. Also, we can say that I went over to speak with city leaders today to find out if the chief's cell phone was issued or paid by the department or the city. They tell me that's not the case. No one in the city gets a phone paid for by the local government here. So if those messages were in fact sent by his phone, Doug, they would have had to be from a private cell. We'll continue to work this story in the days and weeks that come.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, March 22nd, 2018, so I have been told. Before we get to workplace racism, just to make sure I don't forget, Neely Fuller Jr., he often says, producejustice.com, producejustice.com. Neely Fuller Jr., he often says, the creator will send messages, signals, if you will, to you individually sometimes, just messages, signals, information that you should think about, consider, sometimes just to you specifically. And sometimes this is just my way of thinking about things, could be an error, but sometimes I think those messages can be just alerts that you are where you are supposed to be. You are doing what you are supposed to do on your cosmic assignment, if you will. I was in yoga class, of course, this week. The instructor starts the class and says, before we get into the poses, I just want to take a moment to give you context for what we're going to do. I want to make sure that you understand your body is supposed to work together. We don't just do all this stuff. Your body parts are all supposed to work together in context for greater health. Anytime where I'm someplace and someone breaks into an impromptu discussion about the importance of context with regards to what we're doing, I always have a smile and take that as a signal from the creator that I am doing what I am supposed to be doing, especially if I've concluded that what I'm doing is constructive. And I think pretty much every time I've been someplace or reading something or involved in a project where context came up, it was constructive. That's it. This here is workplace racism. If we have any non-white people, particularly any black people anywhere in the world, if you have figured out codification, things to do so that you can be unmolested in the workplace, if you have to take sick days, vacation days, personal days, if you need a transfer, if you want a different office, a bigger office, whatever the issue is, you get it. You get all your raises with no issues. You are not accused of raping anybody. You don't have any of those types of issues on the job. You don't get accused of being aloof, too quiet, not speaking. Get to go hang out, do your job, and you think you're going to be there until you are ready to leave for retirement or whatever it is. We need to hear from you like immediately. You should be one of the first people to dial in. Let us know how you did it so we can replicate your remarkable success. Put that in quotes, success. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate, if you figured out things that work well on the job, certainly dial in. If you have problems on the job, then you for sure should dial in. We can offer a counter-racist suggestion, give our perspective on how you're dealing with things. If you think that would help, let us know. Always appreciate it. And certainly give us updates if you dialed in previously to kind of let us know what's happened on your job, if you're having a problem or what have you. People appreciate hearing how things have unfolded. It's great for us because we're still learning, so we can hear if there's strategies that worked well to help you resolve the situation. That's great. If you had, you know, some difficulties, you can let us know that too, because that helps us refine, you know, if the suggestions were not helpful or if you used a different technique. Anyway, you can also write in. If you're not in an area where you're able to talk, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com, just like it sounds. And I can read your commentary on the air, or if you have your own situation and you want counter-racist feedback or suggestions, you can drop me an email and we can read your commentary on the air this evening. A few things that I wanted to touch on before we get to the callers. First up, Chantel, she's dialed in, non-white female. She's participated in many programs down through the years. She called in last week. She was having a situation where a race soldier, white male, had been harassing her for a long time. Distracting, we'll say that. As I think we talked about this many times, just coming up talking about nonsense, things that have nothing to do with work, wasting time. And so this race soldier, he had been reprimanded twice for this behavior verbally by higher ups in the company. So last week they got a new personnel person, and they are supposed to be working to figure out the office, streamline things, make things more efficient. So the new personnel or new employee was speaking with Chantel and asking her, you know, what do you like about the office? Do you have any concerns, anything you need to share? So I'm just trying to get up to speed on things. And Chantel, she said she didn't want to explicitly indict Richard about his conduct, that she just said that sometimes there are problems with distractions in the office. And, you know, she would appreciate it if that could be dealt with so that she could get her work done. Everybody's really busy and, you know, just so that people could stay on task. Great request. And so the person took this seriously. It was like, oh, OK, we're going to go around and address. And I think last week we said, you know, I said, you know, did you tell her that this race soldier has been reprimanded verbally twice already for being disruptive and told to stop doing that, discontinue that behavior in the office? And she said, no, she didn't do that because she was concerned that there might be retaliation, that Richard, this race soldier, he has other racist friends in the office place, and they might retaliate and try to cause more problems, get her in trouble or, you know, anything. Completely valid, 100% valid. I think I said that on the program before. I told her, and even if I didn't think it was valid, still VGQ, that's victims guaranteed qualified. She's a victim of white supremacy. She can make any decision that she wants. In my view, oh, and matter of fact, let me continue, because I said this last week. I said that, you know, sometimes I think we should be more direct, more explicit, because that's the sort of thing that white race soldiers would do. They would bring up any previous infraction, any sort of reprimand, especially if it is recalcitrance, where it's the same problem is continuing even after we've addressed this, right? That's what they would do. Anyway, so she gave her concerns about not, you know, retaliation and, you know, just get it stopped. I don't want to, you know, call him out explicitly or remind everybody that this guy's already been indicted twice, right? So she doesn't mention his name. Keep it pushing. 24 hours later, they're in a group meeting. This race soldier, as they say, throws her under the bus repeatedly, which she called in to report. We spoke to her off the air, but to report. And I didn't laugh to laugh at her. I just, you know, I thought it was an important point, because you can do everything that you possibly can. You can be as nice as you possibly can. You can smile. You can speak. You can bring in bagels, donuts, coffees, biscuits, tea. We got Stacy in the UK with us, whatever. You can do all of that. When I have said for years, dogs bark, birds chirp, white people practice white supremacy racism. That means you can do whatever you want. At the end of the day, racist man, racist woman, racist child are going to show up as exactly who they are, race soldiers. So you can think that. We can think that, hey, I'm going to, you know, just try and not rock the boat, as they say, just get along. I don't want, you know, to do anything that might get anyone in trouble. And I want to try and make sure that they don't retaliate and come back at me. Often racists do that anyway. So in a workplace, in the context of this specifically, if it's a situation where you are being mistreated, there's a problem that you're experiencing and it needs to be addressed, I would say be on the offensive, meaning be explicit, be direct about what it is that you would like to see happen. You can put that in a question or you can even make statements. But if it's something where you're being mistreated explicitly, go ahead and try to be as direct about that as you can in getting the problem stopped. That's one that you do not want to do a whole lot of pussyfooting, because sometimes that can just let the problem continue and continue and continue. And especially anytime a white person is reprimanded for misconduct on the job and it relates to you, their misconduct is causing you problems, I would definitely want a record. I said this back then. I would want a record, even if it's just a written log or an email to note that this person got a verbal reprimand about their misconduct on this date, because that can be very useful moving forward, especially if it is with someone classified as white. Moving forward, folks that wrote in, we had several emails. First person that wrote in. So last week, we had a black male caller. He dialed in. He said he was experiencing a lot of stress, frustration on the job, just being constantly mistreated. And he kind of reached the tipping point where he said he felt like he just couldn't take it anymore. And he said, whatever happens, happens. He said he had talked to his family members and told them that he was stressed and that, you know, if something happens, this is what it was related to, him being terrorized on the job. And he said his girlfriend, who highlight, does not listen to the cows. His girlfriend, he said, asked him when he, you know, explained some of this to her, his girlfriend or partner, don't recall, but he said that she told him, what would the folks on that nutty radio program that you listen to, what would they say, you know, with your plan here about going to work and quote unquote flying off the handle? And he said, you know, that made him think a little bit, made him stop, you know, reassess what his plan was going to be. If folks remember this last week, we talked about it on Thursday. It's in the archives. So a listener wrote in about this. This is a completely different person, not the same guy who was experiencing all that. This is just someone who listened to all of that and is writing in. So he says, I listened to the brother who was being terrorized on his job, being pushed to the point of taking physical action against a white terrorist with sympathy. His sister, I think it was his girlfriend, giving him positive advice was refreshing to hear. Most black people I have worked with would have egged the brother on to take the physical action and then went to get the popcorn, because this type of thing is entertainment for the sick, for sick, tormented people. I have seen this occur several times and experienced it myself. When one female black coworker suggested I slap the face of a white terrorist because of something he said, and I simply laughed. Like Thomas in New York said, there would be only one end to that scenario. I am retired now, and I feel for the black people who have to work with white terrorists every day. That experience is affecting the quality and length of their lives and is designed to do so. Absolutely. And kudos again to the black female girlfriend who does not listen to the cows for encouraging our listener. Maybe he can dial in and give us an update. All right. Next person wrote in. This is also an update. Previous person who dialed in with having stress from the workplace, black female office situation. Okay. Let's see. I experienced the most severe episode of workplace racism this week in almost 6 years of employment. I raised money for a university. This week, I closed a $500,000 gift from the estate of a former faculty member passed away last year. What started as an exuberant week ended in a reprimand and me taking several mental health days at home to recuperate from the mental mistreatment. I do just want to stop to say, I know it can be difficult, deliberately so sometimes, for us to get those vacation days or sick days or personnel days or whatever it is. We talked about that with Thomas in New York, where that, I mean, can be really, really ugly. Just getting time, or even if you're sick, that can be really, really ugly. But to the degree that you can, that's definitely one that you want to read your policy and procedure immediately so that you know those rules forwards, backwards, sideways, the whole nine. But if you can get mental health days, use them, use them, use them. Man, it is so critically important to recognize when you are stressed, when you're angry, when you're frustrated, when you are not healthy, because those are times when you might not have as much patience And those are times when you might be damaging your body going in and being around these racists and just taking more abuse when you're already at your edge. Continuing, racist suspects employed several predictable tactics. Whoa, there's that word again. Context. In my profession, we have monetary goals that must be reached annually. With the closing size of a gift this size, I would meet my monetary goal and be in first place among the members of my team with 3 months left in the fiscal year. I discussed this gift with my direct supervisor, racist suspect, for over a year. When I received word from the executrix of the will, I shared that with my supervisor. We discussed it again in a one-on-one meeting last week. The executrix of the will came to my office on Monday and produced a check. With that, I began the process of drawing up a document and routing it internally, as is the procedure. All parties on the distribution list replied with small changes or no changes, one even congratulating me on the gift. The VP sent me an email instructing me to send the document to one other party, another racist suspect. A day after doing so, the racist suspect sent me an email of about 5 paragraphs stating that I had improperly followed procedure, made a mistake, and had been informed on 2 other occasions, cited a date in January of this year and a date in 2016 that I was not following procedure for gifts of this type. My supervisor replied to me and asked why I had not included this individual and claimed that according to her notes, she had told me to do so. This was a lie. I replied in kind to all parties, CC'd on that 5-paragraph email, and refuted the lies and irrelevant points mentioned. This situation is still in discussion. The racist suspect appears to be documenting my work, although she is not my supervisor, and attempting to make a case that I am not following procedure. The end result will more than likely be A, not crediting me in full for the entire gift so that I cannot claim my goal, and or B, reprimanding me, probably in my annual review, in spite of my work to close a gift of significant value to the university. I did share this episode by forwarding both emails with the VP of Human Resources, non-white female. She stated that her only feedback is to make sure I have something in writing from my supervisor about how gifts of this type should be handled in the future. Great recommendation. She also commented that I should have a conversation with my supervisor, stating that it is not correct procedure for someone who is not my supervisor to send an email that appears to be documenting my work and activity. I asked her if I should be worried. She said no, she hasn't heard anything about me in that regard. My takeaways are, racist suspects are continually watching us, keeping records, trying to take credit for our work, trying to keep us fearful of losing our jobs, and changing rules at whim to suit their agenda of mistreatment. Absolutely, victim of white supremacy in the great Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia is for hustlers. Absolutely. Documentation. We talk about that all the time. This is one, I would say, maybe 2 aspects of documentation and maybe even for everybody. The first, I totally agree with the HR person. Documentation. It should be policy and procedure. Where exactly is it? What code, what regulation, what rule am I not following? What rule, you know, am I violating? Where is it at exactly? Like, let's get, you know, right down to the details about what's off. That's why I talk about all the time. Make sure you know policy and procedure very well. I think that came up last week. Just for your personal safety and health, it might be in your best interest to be the most competent person on the job, or at least strive to be the most competent person about the things that are happening on your job. The other aspect of it is documentation. I think anytime that you, and increasingly more of us, we're on documenting things digitally and sharing documents where other people can look and edit and go online. I think we've even had some episodes where people have raised concerns that they think their documents could be getting edited. Racists are going in and making changes that they didn't authorize or they didn't know about and that sort of thing. I would take precautions if that means saving multiple copies so that you have another copy saved someplace else. If that means taking screenshots, I would do whatever you can to try to protect yourself, because I think that could be an increasing problem. And if you've got all of this going on where people are keeping tabs on you and surveillance on you and watching what you're doing and trying to make sure, and anything where it seems like a black person is going to win a competition, oh man. Voltron, Mr. Fox over in the UK wants me to write up something to explain adequately what that is. But man, anytime you see a black person doing well in the job, we talked about this in workplace racism a lot. Racists, they're not going to be happy to see you being successful. Even in a situation like this where you brought in $500,000 for a white university. No, we're not ecstatic and whoopee, all this money for us to go and do more racist things. It's, oh my God, this nigger brought in all the money and she might win the competition and make us look bad. Like, ah, let's see how we can mess her over and see if we can take some of the credit so she doesn't win the competition and give her a reprimand. Standard operating procedure. Just keep that in mind. That happens so many times. We've had people call in where they're doing brilliant things on the job and still being abused. Goes back to what I said before. Racist, they're going to show up exactly as they are. I would just go about the business of defending myself, being very competent, and getting records of this mysterious violation and how you went about the gift procedure. If other folks have commentary on anything that was shared, feel free. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have your own situation, dial in. And as I said, if we have folks who have figured out some codification that works for the job, hey, we need to hear from you immediately. You should be one of the first people with a hand up. Folks who dialed in with a hand up with commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Yes, greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to Gus, the listeners and callers. I'd like to share my workplace racism for this week. But first, I'd like to go back to last week and thank everyone once again for everything that they shared, especially when Thomas told me not to try to have any encounters with white people. That always play in the back of my head since that day. It's been working like a charm, and I've been using what I like to call mental kung fu. I've been learning how to deflect or counter things before they even happen. Just by their habits. I'm picking up on their habits. It seems like they're doing either the same thing or they're doing things a little bit different. But I'm just having a clear mind now, so moving forward, I can counter or deflect almost immediately. So my workplace racism this week, I've noticed when I came in, we have two different employee entrances. So on one side, on both sides, they have a mannequin. They have a male and a female. The male has like a gray look to him, so I'm assuming he's supposed to be a non-white male. And the female actually resembles a white female. So every other day I've been coming in through like each, I might go in through gate one and leave out on gate two to move my car, or vice versa. So when I went in, I noticed that I went in on gate, I believe it's gate two, where the quote-unquote female, I guess that's supposed to be a female, mannequin is. So nothing abnormal there. She has on the attire you know, like the uniform. She has like the gloves, the PPE, personal protection gear. And when I leave out on the opposite side, where it's supposed to be the non-white male, he has a scarf tied around his head, some buck teeth drawn on. I believe he might have had lipstick too, and a purse in his hand. So I saw it, but I didn't pay too much attention to it. So when I came back in on that side, I was like, wait, did I see what I saw? So I took the picture. Then I walked back to the other side to see if anyone had put anything on the other mannequin. I noticed they didn't. So when I saw that, I was like, wow, this would be something I'll definitely share with the Kyle's family. So I took the pictures, and I sent them to you. I'm not sure if you got them. And then
which email did you send them to?
There was another incident. Until Justice.
Okay.
I think I sent them a little bit late. I'm not sure.
Let's see. You sent it today?
Yes, sir. Probably maybe 3 minutes before the program started.
Oh, I don't see it. I'll wait a second. I'm looking at my email right now, untiljustice@gmail.com. I'm looking right now. I don't see it. I looked in my spam folder, too. Anyway, sorry for interrupting. If worse comes to worse, I'll let you know a little while later. You can send it again. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, it's no problem. And then there was an issue a while back that I thought about that I forgot to bring up. Since I heard on a Saturday program, people talking about blacks in Africa and the blacks here not working together. There was a guy from Ghana, and he was new to my job. So I noticed that he was being harassed by two, what they call quote unquote line leads. So when I noticed that, I asked him, was he okay? And then he said, yeah, or whatever. And I went on about my way. And hours later, me and him, we started talking again. And then he told me that he was taking a test to become like the guy that was supposed to be over the line leads in that particular area. And so he said that he passed the test or whatever. Like the next day, he told me he passed the test and everything went great or whatever. So I guess he was supposed to start. He was actually training for that job. While he was training for that job, the white guys in that area, they were mistreating him. And I drive like a little buggy. So hours later, I'm driving back up, and I noticed like 7 guys surrounding him, all white guys surrounding him. And he looked nervous. So I walked over, and I was like, are you okay? You good? And he looked at me. He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, yeah. And I looked every one of them directly in their eyes, and I walked away. And then when I drove back past again, I was what they call quote unquote mean mugging them, but I was staring at every last one of them. And I just felt like then I wanted to do something as well, because I feel like even if they're not intimidating me, they're intimidating someone who looked like me, which can very well be me. And this person is vulnerable. They're a victim just like me. And I wanted him to know that he wasn't alone. He told me later on that since that incident, they didn't mistreat him. They were extra nice, showing him a lot of things. And then he said that one white guy walked up to him and asked him, how did you get that guy to talk to you? Asking, how did he get me to talk to him? And then he said that he didn't share any information. He just was like, he just comes by and say hi. And he was like, no, but that guy, he don't talk to anybody. He don't talk to anybody. And I'm also, just in case the listeners are wondering, the same guy that the white people wanted to say, I don't like white people, or I hate white people, whatever they say. And like I kind of keep to myself when it comes to dealing with white people. And I'm always talking to non-whites, whether they're non-white Hispanic or non-white black people. And yeah, that's pretty much my workplace racism.
I'm mute. Black self-respect on the job. We had a lot of that last week, or I think the last 2 weeks, different callers dialing in, talking about ways or things that they try to do to support other black people on the job. Outstanding. I know Dr. Welsing would have a big smile on that with I guess number one, are you the same victim that dialed in last week where your partner was the one who said, you know, what would the Cows listeners think if you, you know, go in and kind of lose your cool? Is that you or a different person?
Yes, sir. That was me. Actually, I was supposed to make that correction. It was, well, my partner, she was actually concerned. She was the one who contacted, like, a lot of my family members, telling them after I had already sent them the information, because they had a clue that something was going on. They didn't know exactly. Me and her, we actually lived together. So when she got the information, she knew, because even the day before, I didn't seem right. Like, she kept talking to me, and I was zoned out. But it was my sister who asked, was, what would you guys think, and what would Dr. Wilson think?
Got it. Thank you for the correction. The person who wrote in had it correct the first time. Sister, kudos to her and partner as well for looking out and contacting family and what have you. But okay, so now we have some continuity from last week to this week. And with the situations, the latter one, as I said, great black self-respect and just checking in on the other non-white person to see if they were okay. Who knows what could have happened. Being surrounded by a posse of white men, race soldiers, on the job. I know some people would say, hey, I'm not going to get involved because then they'll just mistreat everybody. But that's some black self-respect to go and look out for other non-white people on the job to the degree that you can. And that is a fascinating observation, him being able to report back to you that just that was enough to get the racist to back off and change their conduct, at least for, you know, a little while. We'll see how long that lasts. But that is and that I'm glad to hear that he did not give them any information back. I mean, you know, hey, maybe he's telling the truth, maybe not. But if what he said is accurate, hey, that's great that he was codified and not revealing too much about how he got you to speak to him or befriend him or whatever. Whatever the case is. Refresh me your first scenario again.
So the first scenario was, I noticed that they had there's two different mannequins in the employee entrance. The non-white one, which was supposed to be a male, had a scarf on, a purse in his hand, buck teeth, and I think lipstick. And the white female mannequin was not tempered with at all. No vandalism.
Of course not. Yes, that's... I'll keep an eye out on the email if I don't have it in like, I don't know, an hour or so. Maybe if it's not too much trouble, you can send it again. And if it's okay, I'll share with listeners. That sort of thing. That sort of thing, you shouldn't be surprised about it all. Over the years, we've been doing workplace racism. It's been so many incidents of people, racists, whites, either having tacky drawings. I think Chantel, again, she said one of her employees, a white man, he had a drawing. It was only one other non-white person in the office, and they took her picture and did some sort of Photoshop and turned her picture into it was like a wanted poster, like she was some sort of criminal on the wanted list or something, and put it up, and that was supposed to be their ha-ha-ha-ha joke. All those little tacky antics, to not be surprised about any of that. Do exactly what our caller just mentioned. You pull out your phone, quick, put that in your workplace journal, diary, and what have you, and keep it moving. If you feel like you want to say something, if you want to report it to someone and that sort of thing, that's great. But those type of incidents, that can just be something, click, file that away in your folder and use it, you know, when you see fit or what have you. But you should not be surprised about any of that sort of thing. Again, birds chirp, dogs bark, white people. We have folks who have suggestions. Thank you so much for updating us, sir. Do we have folks who have any suggestions on what we just heard from our mail caller, any of the folks who wrote in? If you have commentary on any of that, that is fine. If you have your own situation you would like to address, feel free as well. Folks with a hand up, proceed.
May I be heard?
Greetings, Red in Nevada. Viva Las Vegas.
Thank you for taking my call. Hello, everyone. And definitely big ups to Black Self-Respect for the previous male caller. Just a few notes that I have, and I have been trying to at least keep a workplace journal. No changes with the with a white woman who, of course, still refuses to get my name wrong or get my name wrong. It's been about 6 weeks since she's learned my name, but it's not really like really bugging me. I thought I actually lucked up because there was a few days where she didn't like look my way or talk to me. So I was kind of excited, like, okay, finally this suspected racist will leave me alone. But then, like, if I'm out in the lunch area and I might be eating with like some, most of the time it'll be non-white people, she'll kind of just invite herself over. So I'm kind of just figuring out a way to maybe be more blatant with it. But I'm not, I'm kind of haven't figured it out right yet. Maybe like when she comes and invites herself to sit down at the same table, maybe to just get up, find a reason to just get up. The more interesting things, and I guess I'll start with this other story before I get into the other ones about my workplace. I know there was a black male who was, I think he was like a construction worker or something of that sort, and just talking about how these suspected racists were trying to basically sabotage him or possibly put him in danger. I guess I didn't really notice how, like, you know, real serious that was until my family member, they had told me about a story about their friend, their relative. They worked at a construction site. Something heavy fell on their head and they went home, went to sleep and didn't wake up. So I definitely understand now the gravity of it, that, you know, these things are not just something that, you know, you can just kind of forget about. You never know what will, you know, prompt you to, you know, that'll be your last day and you've given all your energy to these, you know, suspected racists for them to make money off of, you know, your toil. So now back to my story, or my two other incidents. There was actually a memo that went out and kind of like a meeting with my job where, or with the plantation that I work for, where this white man, he is transitioning to, or he has transitioned to a woman. And this, and I saw the person and maybe he should get his money back because I don't really see a difference. But there was a non-white person who had, was kind of making jokes about it. And I made sure to not, you know, chime in with that. I know I discussed before how like the plantation that I work for, they have different groups. And one of the largest groups, like the little diversity type of groups that they have, is the anti-sexual leaning group. So they have supporters, and then of course there are people there. But I also felt like, you know, that is definitely a display of, you know, racism, white supremacy, of course, not only because this is a white man slash woman, but I see different, you know, I guess anti-sexual, transsexual people there, like women who kind of appear to be more masculine. And I don't see any meetings or anything like that going out for them. And then the last thing actually happened today, another incident with a transsexual white man. I asked him a question, and as we were walking back over to my work area, I was confirming something that he said, and I said, "Yes, sir. This is different from the other person who was transitioning. This is somebody completely different." But I said, "Yes, sir." He was like, "Don't call me sir. Call me," and he gave me the nickname. And he's like, "If you call me sir again, I might have to slap you." And I just took a note of it because I feel like, you know, they kind of get like, I'm not surprised by it at all, but I kind of feel like, you know, they kind of feel like, I hear a lot that, you know, the gay, quote unquote, anti-sexual gay struggle is the same as like the quote unquote black struggle. So I feel like, you know, that's just another reason for them to kind of for them to practice racism. And so, I mean, I'm not really worried about it, but I know that I'm just definitely going to stay away from that individual. He's definitely one of those types who are kind of condescending and real smart alecky. So that's all I'll share for now. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Appreciate that, Red in Nevada. Wow, that for sure, I can see that being super dangerous for a lot of non-white people in the workplace and probably in a lot of other situations as well. That whole, the LGBT, I, A, whichever other letters they have added as it continues to grow, that wing of the White Supremacy Division, super, super effective and dangerous 21st century, in my opinion. With that, I would definitely stick by the code on that. Call people what they want to be called. It wouldn't be a snicker, no hesitation, anybody. Like, I don't have a comment. I don't have a thought. What is it I'm supposed to call? Got it. Okay. And that's what it would be every time, and keep it moving. That would be my recommendation for any non-white person anywhere in the world, whatever it is that they want to be called, pronoun or, you know, don't call me. Mm-hmm. And keep it pushing, because they will totally go after black people in particular for that. I think we've already seen a lot of evidence of that anyway. Certainly with the construction aspect, totally legit to take it seriously. I think sometimes it's important for us to be reminded of how serious this is, that racism, white supremacy causes people to die all the time. Sometimes it's not as dramatic as Oscar Grant type situations, Renisha McBride type situations. Sometimes you just, the racism, white supremacy, you die in your sleep, and that's that. Still an act of terrorism, but nothing that flashy. And the importance of being codified on the job, whether you're in a construction situation or not, having your safety as in the forefront of your mind when you're on the job. Actually, before I transition to any of the other folks who dialed in, if they have questions or calls that they want to get in, good code, I think, or I guess folks can give their thoughts about the race soldier white woman who is intruding on your lunch space. If they maybe have something different than just getting up and walking away as soon as she leaves, if she'll get the hint and desist that way. But I did want to go back to the previous male caller. I think you said you had figured out a successful code for deflecting some of the racist verbal attacks on the job. If I heard that correctly, because we do need people who have figured out some things that work. If I did hear that correctly, what exactly was your method for deflecting verbal racist attacks, if I heard correctly?
So one of the deflects is, if I see them approaching, and I pretty much know who most of them are, if they're going to come just to try to be racist, or if they're about trying to conduct business. So if I know that one of the ones that joke around or just coming to try to practice racism or approaching, and it could be anyone, you never really know who, but I assume, because the usual ones are always doing the same thing, I'll pretend to be extra busy. If I see them coming, I'll either, just like she said, walk away, or I'll stop them before they can get close, and I'll ask them if they needed something. And when they look shocked because they don't expect me to talk to them, that'll throw them off a little bit. So if I see them approaching me and they're looking like maybe they're going to say something or do something, maybe not directly racist to me, I'll deflect, or I'll counter it. By either asking them if they need something, or asking them, did they see something? Like, oh, did you see this part right here? Because I was looking for it. And that'll throw them off. And they're like, wow, you talking to me? Oh, no, I didn't see it. And then I have like this stupid look on their face. And then once they can't see me, I'll smirk and I'll rise and walk off. But that's been working thus far.
That would seem like asking questions. Again, I know somebody does recommend, particularly when we are at work, the degree you can stay in the question lane can be very, very helpful in minimizing conflict and getting information. Lots of good things can happen when you can stay in the question lane. And just that right there, it seems like just asking that question at that time is interrupting whatever plan that they had, which is probably something, you know, dastardly and racist evil that they had concocted for you or other non-white people in the facility. But just asking a question, recognizing, oh, here they come, I will preempt and strike first with a question. That just something as simple as that. Maybe some other people can implement that on the job. Other folks, if you have either commentary, suggestions on what we've heard thus far, Red Nevada, a male caller here, or any of the folks who wrote in, or if you have your own situation that you would like to address, line should be open. Feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, callers and listeners. Just wanted to bring up a situation that had occurred with me at work. This is where I did fall out of code. And I realized it afterwards, and I'm basically trying to make sure that I don't get into this situation again. But a simple conversation, there were three of us in the office. Two of us were talking in regards to past jobs we had. Nothing out of the norm, structure and change that occurred in jobs. And then the conversation came up about, you know, like jobs that we've had in the past that, you know, maybe we should have taken a little bit more interest in. And to me, I thought it was very, you know, it was a productive conversation. But then another coworker came over out of the blue, and he was non-white, and stated that, you know, if he could do it all over again, he'd be a cop. And immediately, I knew I shouldn't have said anything, but it was almost like an emotional response. And that's where I got caught, because immediately when he said it, I said, I could never do that job. You know, that's not a job cut out for me, knowing what they do and how they do it and who they gear their energy towards. Immediately, as I said that, that individual walked out of the room and left. Within less than 5 minutes, he came back. And within that time frame after he came back, a white man came in. Another one of my coworkers came in, and then kind of almost was like he was snooping around the conversation and trying to see where this is coming from. Why do I feel that way, so to speak? I did realize afterwards that part of it is because of my engagements dealing with police officers. I've been falsely arrested before, just walking down the street, thrown in jail overnight. I had to make bail. My whole alibi was my job. So henceforth, when I went to my job, my place where I work, I had to explain to them what occurred for them to give me a reference so that I could actually show that I wasn't the individual that committed the crime. Weeks later, I was released from that job. They let me go on, of course, nonsensical issues. They just fired me. And for a whole entire year, I had to wait until my background was clear, until I could actually go back to work and start to really apply so that nobody would do a background check and see that I was actually fighting the case. So when that individual mentioned the cop, it just completely threw me off and triggered something. And those are things that I don't know if anybody else has dealt with it, where something just catches you off guard that is not the norm. That being said, I'll mute my line. I just wanted to throw that out and see if anybody else has experienced that. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us. I think it's definitely important to recognize things that are difficult for us. I think all of us have subject areas, particular topics that are a bit more sensitive, as you said, might trigger us to respond in a certain type of way. I think that's important to recognize for workplace situations. It seems like, at least from what you reported, this didn't cause any problems. Like, I didn't hear anything about, you know, you're going to be fired or reprimanded or anything. So hopefully this won't be anything that, you know, causes any serious damage. Although I do think it is very important. We talked about this before. At least I know I've talked about this before. When I say, you know, we're not talking about politics on the job, you know, we're not talking about what happened in Austin or what you think about Donald Trump or President Obama, like that, you know, the workplace is not designed for that. And I take that position even with non-white people, exactly for the reason that we just heard from this male caller. I believe he said he was talking to a non-white person when he said he couldn't, you know, take the job as an enforcement official and gave all the reasons why he couldn't do it. This person left. I don't know if they stormed out or were upset or disgusted or whatever. I don't know if they went out and went and got the suspected racist. And like, you know, I can't believe, you know, what Tom said in the break room. You know, we're talking about being a enforcement officer. And he comes out of his mouth with all this nonsense. Can you believe it? And that could have happened. It would not surprise me. That sort of thing under the system of racism, white supremacy is very, very common. I think we've had that reported before. So that's why I say, you know, you can't assume just because it's not saying that you did, just, you know, for listeners in general, you can't assume just because it's a non-white person, just because it's a black person, that you can say whatever you want. I've said repeatedly, you should speak every time. If you're talking to any non-white person, you should speak as though you're talking to every single employee who has ever, will ever work for the company. And they'll have a total transcript of everything that you're going to say. To really try to have that in mind as much as you can. I think that can even help sometimes, even with when topics come up that are difficult for us, topics where we know we have a lot of passion and might want to respond. I think if you can just have that mindset that I'm not even just talking to this person who's saying something right now, I'm talking to everybody here. I think if you can have that, it'll help you. I think it can help regulate some of those responses so that you don't begin talking before you've had a moment to really stop and think, say, what do I want to say to make sure I don't cause any problems for myself today, tomorrow, 20 years down the road? Any other folks have commentary? And wouldn't surprise me at all if that race soldier came in to do exactly what you said, to snoop, practice racism. Gonna have to get more information about this nigra in here having all these wacky things to say. We'll have more eyes, more attention focused on him in the future. Sounds totally logical. Number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. If folks have commentary on what we have heard thus far, or if you have your own situation you would like to address, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I would say even in a environment, working environment that is dominated and or all non-white black people should refrain from talking about racism or really lessen the talk on racism. As we can recall, Dr. Welsing lost her tenureship at Howard University, which is a quote unquote historical black college. And what I mean by talking also, you know, if you're writing something and whatever that, which is, was her case. I was just hearing the different reports and the thought just sticks in my mind of what I would have said to that, the sexually confused white person. I'm talking about, I think, the lady from Las Vegas. I probably would have asked the question. It may have been incorrect. I don't know. But just to my mind, I would probably ask the question, are you threatening me? When he or she or whoever the person identified themselves as stated that that I think she said that I would quote unquote slap you or something like that. My question would have been, well, are you threatening me? You know, and just, you know, don't help with the answer. And whatever that answer is, which I don't think it would have been something constructive, recorded it down, recorded it as far as that concern. Anyway, I'll continue to listen and something that I think I can help with or you know, share something with it, I'll attempt to do so. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Retired firefighter in Florida. I think, to at least to me, that sounds constructive and logical, that response. Again, question lane, default to the question lane. Are you threatening me? I thought that was important, too, because I thought that was super dangerous. I think Red Nevada did say that she recorded that in her workplace journal. But I mean, wow, that sounds like a flagrant threat. And just for the record, I'm so glad retired firefighter mentioned that. I would not take any sort of personal threats in the workplace. That is nothing to joke with, especially coming from someone classified as white. That's nothing to joke with. Minimize, play about, that is always something to record and to take extremely serious. No sorts of threats in the workplace. I wouldn't snicker when they make a comment like that. I wouldn't care if the person is quote unquote gay, queer, lesbian, transsexual, bisexual, transitioning, whatever. If they're classified as white, I would take that super serious, like Austin Bomber serious. Did you have anything you want to add on that, Red? Or assume she's all right.
Oh no, I'm sorry. No, I appreciate that. I was just I was thinking about that, and I know I'm around those type of people just because, like what other people have said before, it's just that they're following, I guess what you would say, is so vast. They have, like, you know, that universal rainbow. And so there are so many different people. They'll either have like their kind of logo or something like that near their, on their desk. But the main thing, like with him, is that he's real like condescending. And since it was just between me and him, if I didn't really want to draw too much attention to it, even though in the back of my mind, I'm like, that's still not correct. No matter what your activities are outside of work, you still, you know, I'm sure he would not, you know, just joke around like that with a white woman that he did not know. Cause I really didn't, that was like the first time I ever spoke to that man, but no, I appreciate, but I still definitely appreciate that, that suggestion. Now I'll mute my line.
Imagine any of the listeners here. We've had so many listeners all over the world for years who have commented, including Red in Nevada, who have commented, reported on racists mispronouncing their name, making up little nicknames and ditties and such for them instead of calling them by their proper title. Imagine now if Red went up to that white woman. Look here, Becky. Next time you don't get my name correct, I'm going to have to slap you upside the head. Now imagine, like in any context, black people doing that with a smile, with a joke. Imagine that being able to happen. And, you know, oh, you're so funny. No, I don't think so. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, if you have suggestions on what we've heard thus far, if you have your own situation you want to address, feel free.
Can I be heard again?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter.
Yes, I just remembered. I just want to report on my opinion about a white person that was that came over to my mother's place of residence. This was a quote unquote professional nurse, and she was there to, according to what I was told, to make an assessment of my mother. And as I walked into the door to participate in this meeting, she referred to me as a boy. And automatically, if anybody really, you know, knows me, the wheels started turning in my head on how am I going to be able to address this distinction to me. Basically to report back to her in code that I got it and I know I have an idea on who I'm dealing with and who you are as a white person practicing racism, you know, in my mother's place of residence. And she finally got to the point because she was getting a assess of everything, including my mother's children, offspring. And of course, I'm one of them. And so anyway, she asked me what my name was because she had to take this information down, you know, in case of dire emergency on whoever company she's representing. to contact. And I'm certainly one of the contact people. And when she did that, I put it back to her about her comment. I told her my name, and I said, I would like not to be referred to as a boy. You know, and you can hear I'll just use the old metaphor. You can hear a rat pissing on cotton in my mother's house. It was myself, my mother, and two of my brothers and sisters that was there also at the time. And because of what I wanted to do, I didn't want to train any attention to me, but I did want her to get it. As far as that concerned, and she just moved on with what she was doing, but I'm pretty sure that she got on where I was coming from, and that's my particular report. And it was her workplace, to be exact, which, you know, most white people in their workplace, they're not going to be performing in a way that can be considered to be constructive, especially when they're dealing directly with non-white black people. Thank you.
Black self-respect. Great job. Didn't disrupt the business at hand and still got to practice some black self-respect. Dr. Welsing would appreciate that as well. Folks have written in, quite a few people. And incidentally, I think, several people have written in, and I still don't have the photograph of the racist vandalism to the mannequin. How about that? First person that wrote in, I work at a school in a special needs classroom. This is a black female. One of my co-teachers is an older white male, around 60. I try to keep my distance, but there are times we need to communicate about the students. During the day, I take several breaks to pump. I am currently breastfeeding. All right on. Black mothers are super, 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 super important, and she's breastfeeding. That is spectacular. And nursing my 8-month-old. Each time I come back, he asks about my breaks. It is no secret that I have to pump. Mind you, he insists my direct supervisor. He isn't my direct supervisor, so my breaks are of no concern to him. After he asked about my breaks a few times and asked where I was going, I finally got frustrated and said, I'm going to go pump, to which he replied, oh, you gonna go fill them up? I was disgusted. She has that in quotes. Other times he has touched me on my leg or my shoulder, and he always seems to follow me around the classroom. Today he called me gal, a plantation reference for female slaves. Every day I dread going to work, and I'm not sure how to move forward. Any suggestions are greatly appreciated. Like, woo, no touching. Like, I don't know if HV is here, how her no touch policy has gone, but the touching, like, no, I would just say the code should be like default at minimum, no casual touching, like the max we're going to do on the job is a handshake. We're not going to do a half hug. We're not going to do rubs. We're not going to do any petting on the leg. We're not going to do any chest bumps, fist bumps, head rubs. The max we're going to do in terms of physical contact is a handshake, and get that established up front. All that other stuff, immediately. Whoa, I do not do touching on the job. Please respect my personal boundaries. You can, whatever, you know, we talked about it before, whatever verbiage you want to put to it that you're comfortable with, that you can practice saying so that you can exercise maximum black self-respect when you say it. But, oh, no, no touching at all. I would make that very clear and stop that immediately. No touching. Right? Because this just sounds like a sexual predator. We talked about this consistently. The tendency is it gets worse. They just get bolder. They've been saying emboldened. They get emboldened to just do more, say more, become more and more terroristic as it goes. I would put the brakes on that immediately. The pumping, comment, or you're going to go fill them up, and then gal, that would be documented. And I think the gal thing, you can take the line that retired firefighter just gave. You can just say it calm. Please do not ever reference me as gal again. My name is such and such and such and such. That's what I would like to be called every time you need to refer to me. Thank you kindly. You can give them the Gus T. Thank you kindly as well. But just lay that down. And it's been my experience. I think other callers, particularly, I think black females who've been in these type situations with white males, when they see that you are serious and you are going to speak up, that you are, you know, they cannot just come in and say whatever they want, do whatever they want, that they will be a little more cautious with how they proceed. But I would speak and make it every time, be very serious in terms of setting boundaries about, you know, how you want to be talked to, spoken to, what, you know, is just being professional in the world, especially if you're all in a classroom, like, my Lord. But yeah, this guy sounds like a total predator. I even worry about the children's safety. Jerry Sandusky. Did any folks have any suggestions for our caller and how she's should go about, you know, dealing with all of this? Saying she's dreading going to work, that's important to me. That suggests that this is really becoming a strain on your mental health if you are dreading going to work because of this race soldier. Any suggestions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
As I've probably said many times before on this program, we're going to have to speak directly to a person, a white person, that not even a white person, a non-white person also, to anybody. You're going to have to speak directly to them about that, about things of that nature. And then I'm not saying that it's going to be a situation where they're going to automatically respond to that favorably, but I don't see, I'll just put it with me. I don't see myself answering to it. Whatever I'm doing, if someone calls me by a distinction, whether the name, whether the object they call me by or whatever, and it's something that is not reported on who I identify myself as, I would not respond to it at all. If it was something that they identified me as and they put it after it to come here, you wouldn't get a response from me at all. Whatever I was doing, I'd continue to doing it. You know, as far as that concerned, as long as I'm doing what fits within the realms of the employment that I have, and I'm doing that, you know, I would not respond to it. I'm telling you things that I did. As I mentioned to everybody before, I actually, quote unquote, legally, whatever the hell that means, legally changed my last name, and the transition from white people as well as non-white people calling me by the name that I designated for myself. As far as what I remember, it didn't take no more. It was almost like magic. Because if it was anything, I didn't respond to it other than that, you know, as far as that concerned. And I was always prepared to answer the question on why I did it. If someone wanted to including the white female judge who sat on the situation, you know, it was just myself and attorney and her. I gave her a direct reason on why I did that, why I was going to do that. You have to speak directly to that. I don't understand femininity because I'm not a female, although all of us have a level of the two, you know, femininity and masculinity. Of course, females have more of that. But I have seen some females who will, you know, if you call them by something that they don't want to do, they will let you know. And I'm saying, if you're not that personality, train yourself to do so. You got to train yourself to do so. It's essential that you do that, or you're going to keep having that problem. You're going to keep having that problem. Unless you want to keep having that problem 25, 30 years, you know, maybe you want that. I mean, I'm not saying maybe you want it, but maybe you could put up with that. I don't know. But, I mean, you gotta let that person know. Sorry if I took too long, but I'm like, you know, poignant on that, you know, as far as that concerned. Thank you for listening.
I think somebody did say something at the beginning of the program about sometimes it's important to be on the offensive, to be direct about what you want or think should happen in the workplace. That would include how you want to be addressed personally. We have any other? Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll just make it quick. This is Red in Nevada again. Definitely understand the importance of making sure that stops, because like Gus had said, my name, I don't, just one white woman, whatever reason, practicing racism, probably refuse to get my name right. So I would definitely make sure. Now, what I do is know my name is this. If somebody calls you by something that you don't want to be called, oh, I'm sorry, or I usually say I'm sorry, but I'm not really, but you know, my name is this. So that way they understand that you are serious. And then with the whole touching thing, it's with males, I didn't have that problem, but you know, a few years ago or whatever, there was the touching by a white female, and just not putting a stop to it right away just made it kind of get worse. It became like a joke, and then it kind of emboldened the person. So I can tell you just from experience, it did, you know, I can definitely understand. As far as the black female who wrote in. So I would just, you know, try to make it as clear as possible. And if you, and if she has any type of, maybe like an anonymous way of, if she doesn't feel comfortable just going right out to contact, I don't know if she's like in a teacher's union or something like that. But just contacting a HR, just saying, hey, I'm having some unwanted touching and unwanted, possible sexual, comments made. How should this be handled? And, you know, probably trying to go from there, but just it's more than likely it's just only going to get worse. But I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Emmy, in the DMV area.
Greetings. I think there are two types of situations. One where I'm a black female, non-white black female, when a non-white male might do something inappropriate, that, or female, that non-white person gets one warning. They're the person who gets the warning. White people don't get warnings. At least that's my code now. It took me some time to get there, but white people know exactly what they're doing when they're doing it. And so I would follow the very precise reporting mechanism that's in place and just do that then. That would be, there is no warning. I'm not going to say, oh, don't touch me, or, oh, this, that, and the third. None of that is occurring. You did it. You knew it was wrong. You shouldn't have done it. I wasn't the one, period. Like I said, non-white people get a warning. Like, you know, hey, that's not correct. Don't do that, you know. I had a conversation with a non-white black female, and she was sharing that there's a non-white, like, Hispanic male, but he's not one of the ones that, like, looks white, that's, like, been making advances. And I told her the exact same thing. I think that's the most effective way, just because everybody gets training. I've never had a job where I didn't receive some type of training about sexual harassment. So let me say not all, but most, in which case, especially when you work with children, he knows what he's doing, and there's no reason for you to suffer. There's no reason for you to be terrorized. Just report it. Go ahead and follow the actual way that it should be and let the chips fall as they may. Thank you.
Anybody think it would cause more problems than necessary or unwarranted risk to report this suspected predator?
Can I answer that question, even though I just spoke?
I reckon.
Much obliged. I don't think that it would create more problems. Why I don't think it would create any more problems is because that's why that mechanism is in place. I think that you run the risk of creating more problems by trying to directly deal with this suspected racist white supremacist who's sexually terrorizing you. Sexual harassment, as far as I'm concerned, is probably one of the most important things that I get from any type of training. And so you dealing with that, like, I'm I don't think it would create more problems. I mean, it could, but whether you do or don't, you got problems. I think this way solves problems instead of creating them.
I think once a situation... Oh, yes, sir. We can hear you.
Oh. Sorry, you can go ahead, guys.
I was just going to say, once it gets to a point where you're dreading going to work, that's like last week when the black male called, he's with us now. The black male that called in and said, you know, he felt like it was at the tipping point where something might happen. And he was kind of letting his family know, you know, it could sound like it might even get to a counter violence point. That is like crisis. I mean, that is, you know, we're talking like mental health crisis at that point. And if it's every day, someplace that you have to be 40 hours a week, could be more. And this is your profession. You might be here for, you might be working with this guy for years, and you're dreading getting up and going to work. Imagine how, and you're a teacher. Imagine how that, you know, impacts what you do with the children. I mean, that's huge. That's the sort of thing that this broadcast is supposed to counter, that's the result of racism, white supremacy, right? You just get up and that's what you do. You dread every single day to go in and be terrorized and abused. And that's what you have to look forward to. Counter racism is about, no, we are going to solve this problem so that we do not get up and dread dealing with the same problem every day. This is the problem that came up on Monday. We're going to see if we can get that problem solved as quickly as possible on Monday, if not early Tuesday morning. That's the goal of counter racism, to solve these problems permanently. Thank you for your patience, sir. Proceed.
Now, I was just going to say that my suggestion would be to send an email to someone, whoever, the junior school, or asking what is the procedure for someone to, what is the proper procedure to handle the issue and detail everything, and just wait for a response. As long as that's in the email, then you'll have some type of paper trail. Also, I do think that there may be repercussions, just because you can't get whites in trouble and don't expect anything to come back. So just in case, I would prepare for anything. And then also, I think that that was Emmy before that had to deal with a suspected racist that was trying to touch her, and she would like have like this gross out move, like dip away really, really fast, so that way he'd know that she's uncomfortable. I would probably try something like that. And then also with sexual harassment, I believe the policy goes however the victim perceives it to be. So if I'm the victim of it, and I believe that someone is making unwanted advances, that it's my perception. And that's what it says in the policy at my workplace. So I will probably look into the policy or the sexual harassment area and see what it says. I'm pretty sure that that's like the standard. It goes by the victim perception. And I'll meet my line.
Always great to consult policy and procedure. And I think the email suggestion, what's the procedure for dealing with, you know, the remarks or touching or whatever it is, I think that's great. I know I've recommended before, if you all have a faculty meeting where you have all the instructors present, and you can just, I am sure if you're in any sort of school environment, I am sure that they had some sort of training on sexual harassment. You can just add, I would try to say verbatim the comment, like, is this acceptable in this, you know, work environment? Is this, you know, acceptable professional verbal conduct? And see what they say. And if not, what's the procedure for handling it? And I would hope that he's there. You don't have to say his name, just trying to get an idea of, you know, how we are supposed to conduct ourselves in a professional manner. Thank you for your help. With a smile, calm. Any other suggestions for this person that wrote in? Grand. I'm going to read one more, and then other folks who dialed in, if they... I think I got the pictures this time. Wonderful. Okay. Next person that wrote in my college, what I've noticed is that non-Black students love to rally with and try to hang out with the first Black person that tells a joke or says something funny. I have seen this with multiple students. I am an older, less confused student, so I can pick up on certain behaviors. I know when I was talking to my Black teacher about something, and it was kind of funny to us, these white students interrupted the conversation so she could be entertained. I only know this because she then started sitting next to me for the next few classes, waiting to be entertained. Wow. Great observation. White people are super observant of non-white people, especially Black people. And if you're on a college campus, you're more than likely around more refined racists. So they will be especially observant of the Negroes, especially if it seems you all might have something entertaining, witty, insightful to offer. They will be especially quick to take notice. And you should have that. That's why I keep saying that in the workplace as well. You should just assume that you're under surveillance, that they're going to be paying attention to you, watching what you're doing, what you're bringing in, what you're eating. That's what it means to be classified as white. They are not ignorant about us at all. And that's something that we should not forget ever. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary, folks, if there's any folks with a hand up that we've not heard from at all, if you have commentary you would like to share, line should be open. Stacy, all the way in the UK, let's see, I think if it's still a 7-hour time difference, it would only be 1:34 a.m. Friday morning. 1:34, only 1:34 a.m. Stacy in the UK, did you have any commentary? Not hearing. I don't know. She might not have. She might just be listening. I'll check in if she's just listening. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary you wanted to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. Good evening. 2812 from Virginia. I hope everybody's doing well. I'm going to share a little bit real quick. For those who aren't familiar, I'm in banking in the area of economics. And I was teaching a class today. And the good thing, well, I don't even want to call it good, but I've been reading this book. It's called The Color of Money, Black Banks and a Racial Wealth Gap. Written by a non-white female. Not sure if she's a Black female, but the book is about Black banking economics. Pretty good book as well. And so in this class today, I was teaching it, and there were three white people in the class. There was nobody else. And so we got on the topic of construction cost, and specifically how difficult it is in certain towns and areas in the United States to, you know, build a certain type of property because the cost of materials is so high. And so I was giving him an example of a property. And when I teach classes, I only know one way to do it. I use real life examples and things of that nature. So I was just giving him an example of a property that my family and I owned a while back, and currently own properties in a different state. And when we were going through costs, this white guy says, "Oh my gosh, it costs what? How'd you guys get stuck with that?" And I just kind of looked at him and I said, "Well, you know," I said, "it was passed down from generation to generation." And he was like, "Oh, okay." And I'm just like, this guy is sitting there assuming that because we're Black, we don't necessarily own anything of value. So that was one way he practiced racism. Then we're going, finishing up the class, and literally, I don't even know what I was talking about. And he gave an example. He decided to just, he wants to tell a story. and he was talking about some couple. He didn't describe their ethnicity, but he said, yeah, I don't know. These people, they were just really, really poor. Like, they stretched everything, and they were just extremely poor. He's like, I've never seen that level of poor. Now, mind you, this is a realtor, and he helped these people buy a house. And for him to speak about those people in that particular manner, I'm 99% sure that those people were not white. That was the nature of that. Just wanted to share something in our business, specifically for non-white people. Just continue to watch in the area of economics. Interest rates and mortgages are going to be continue to rise. And as we all know, and what I've been learning and known for the last couple of years, is that when the U.S. economy catches a cold, black people die. It's not pneumonia, they die. And they are affected tremendously. So watch your nickels, save them, and just be as frivolous as possible. And that's all I have to share. Thanks, Gus. I appreciate it.
As frugal as possible, not frivolous. Frugal as possible, practical, miserly as possible.
Not frivolous, man. Frugal. I'm tired, man. Sorry about that.
victim. I'm a victim as well. I understand. Just noting, just being observant in the workplace when those, you know, kind of tacky remarks like, wow, you can read, these niggers own property and can read. That is the most amazing thing. Just making note. And again, those are opportunities when you're prepared, when you're not surprised about what it means to be white. You don't have those emotional responses, you know, where you feel like you got to retaliate or something like that. You did birds chirp, dogs bark. Mm-hmm. You just go on with your day and, you know, mm-hmm, that's about what I expected. Now, the tacky guy in finances, I'm sure he, you know, had to look at these people's financial specs, you know, if he's in real estate or what have you, to know that, you know, these folks are not crackhead homeless bums or what have you. But that's racism, white supremacy. And again, same thing, just understanding what it means to be white. No confusion about these sort of comments. Other folks, any comments that they wanted to share? If you had suggestions for any of the folks who dialed in, the teacher and the situation, certainly if any folks had suggestions on that, that's grand. If we have any folks that we've not heard from at all, you should certainly speak up and share if you have commentary or looking for suggestions.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. Gus, I wanted to start out by, I wanted to point out that I had sent you a couple of pictures, and it was that circuit rider or that newsletter where they had put my picture, I think it was on the second page of the newsletter about helping the pregnant white woman. And on the three images, one is like a couple of months back, I had mentioned about there was two black females who were given this old book award. Okay, and it's this large, like, oversized, you know, ancient-looking kind of dictionary. And the two, like, it was three of them that I remember it started with. It was two, the first two was black females, and it was a white woman who got it last, as far as I remember. And the warden, who was wearing the same clothing, is on those images. But she isn't there anymore, but that is the face that goes with that. That has some context. And there's a third image, like, toward the bottom, where, like, that's, like, where my department is. And, like, I'm not in the picture, you know, so I willfully made sure I wasn't there to take the picture. I said I had to go do something. And the white man who was in the center, like, that's the white man who was practicing racism, saying that he would just look at the screen if I could just finish speaking. So, and also within that last image, the black female is on the right, to the far right, that I had to speak out in the meeting about. So just to start out to add some context to some of my past situations and incidents, I wanted to start out with, there was this document that I was looking over, and I think it was about truancy, like for the kids who go to juvenile court. They have a person summaries report, I think that's what it's called. And there's like an extensive racial area of it. And they have these different ways of describing race. And one of the most interesting parts of it is it's this thing called race/ethnicity determination option. Okay, so it's four codes. The first code is parent identified, like somebody can be a white person. And then, you know, one of the juvenile kids was white, and it said parent identified white. And another one was a black child. That one said code 03, observer identified. Now, I don't know what all of this means, but this is actually was listed in the documentation. And code 2 is self-identified. So somebody can be a white male, okay, white parent identified, or white self-identified, but the black person is black African-American observer identified, and 4, code 04 is unknown. Now, I ain't never heard of none of that kind of stuff, but it really floored me when I seen it. I don't know if anybody else has seen this. This is just describing like adolescent teenagers or whatever. But there was to share another incident, there was a race soldier that was a customer, and it was me and my white female coworker. I was busy on the phone. I was assisting a customer, and he looked at me, and naturally I would be observing the incoming customer, and he says, oh, you know, I'm coming for you, or, you know, I'm here for you. And then he just busts out laughing. You know, this guy looks like he's a SWAT vest and everything, and, you know, all black uniform and all of that. So he goes back to get assisted by the white woman. And so, you know, I noted that, and I sent an email of that to my other personal email that I encountered that. And there was another incident too, where we're learning the training for taking the pictures for like passports, and they were sending this book around where, you know, they have pictures and examples of how they want you to take a photo for a passport. So it looks like in a lot of the examples, a lot of the facial grimaces and the way that they want you to pose is, I compared it to a mugshot, and a black female agreed with me. She said, you know what, I was thinking the same thing. And I'm like, why is it in a lot of the examples they have the black people, or, you know, non-white people, they kind of have a smirk, or they're not really smiling at all. They'll use a green check to indicate this is the correct way to take a passport picture. And then they'll have the white person showing more of a warm smile or a noticeable smirk or something that's indicating anything other than a straight face, or what they call metaphorically a poker face. And a lot of keen examples of what I think is racism when you compare them. And they even have white babies smiling, but the non-white people in the examples aren't showing any smiles, not even really a smirk. But that's all that I had to share right now. And mainly that race, ethnicity, determination thing, and also add, they have something called state race and federal race. That was another interesting piece on that documentation. And that's all I have to share right now. Thank you.
What is that? State race and federal race?
I had looked up a
Be here tomorrow for Angie Thomas, The Hate U Give, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific.
I noticed one said federal race ethnicity code may be different than race ethnicity selection. And I know that it was trying to state a difference between state, because they're saying, well, hold up. If the state race code, this one says if the state race code is different than the federal categories, select the appropriate state race code from the drop-down list. The list of options varies by state. Refer to the state's Department of Education website for proper guidance.
Wow. I don't know if anybody else finds that fascinating. It might just be, you know, Gus T. Renegade is loony and, you know, you call us with their arcane court documents, but in the system of white supremacy, racial classifications are very, very important. And in my view, that just shows further evidence that white people, you cannot be ignorant about racism, white supremacy. I've talked about this for years. 9 years of the cows. I've talked about this. Those racial classifications are very, very important. And this is so meticulous. Just listen. I mean, you got state racial classifications, state by state racial classifications, federal racial classifications. We just had that report about the census that we talked about on the compensatory call-in a few days back. And then the detail of parent reported racial classification, self report racial classification, observer identified. I mean, wow, that is super. And all of this for truancy? Like, man, this is not for passport. Yeah. Come on. And you're going to tell me that white people are ignorant about race? Come on. That fast. And this has come up repeatedly. That's why I said you could get a PhD just going to work with my man at the courthouse. You can learn all about racism, white supremacy right there. The racial class, that's nuts and bolts of racism right there. Just with those racial classifications. And that comes up on those forms all the time. He's had so many anecdotes with that. And then everything else in tow. The SWAT officer coming in and, oh, came for you. And that's happened repeatedly where you get referenced as some sort of criminal or thug or bandit, sometimes by the white coworkers there. They'll use a metaphor and include you as the criminal. Isn't that so?
That is correct. And some of them on that picture.
Oh, okay. Right on. Oh, that was one thing I was going to say. That is a great code that might be useful to other folks. If you have to take any sort of photos like these that you know that's coming for the job, you might want to, you know, think ahead and see if you can figure out, get the time of when it's going to happen. And, oh, man, I got to run that errand. Looks like I won't be here, but, you know, just I'll be here in spirit. No problem. If you can figure that out in advance, if you want to get out any photo ops, spectacular. Great effort. Great effort. Did other folks have any other commentary that they wanted to share? Appreciate that. Our caller in Florida. Other folks have other information that they wanted to share or have suggestions on anything that we've heard? Anybody that we missed completely have commentary? Did we miss any folks? Any folks have a hand up that we hadn't heard from at all? Grant, we'll assume that we did not miss anybody. Any other comments, suggestions folks had, they want to make sure they get in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to share something I've been practicing that I think is actually very constructive. I mentioned it before, but I want to mention it again just because I really think that it is very helpful and very constructive in fostering healthier relationships between myself and other non-white people, specifically, whether it's at work or at school, which I just consider work part two, or really work part one. The job I have is work part two. Anyway, and that is being not overly excessively, but being complimentary, encouraging, supportive, and also not allowing them to say self-denigrating things. Like sometimes they'll be like, oh, I'm so stupid. I'll be like, no, you're not. Like right then, right there, I just stop it and don't speak like that. It's not something that I make a whole conversation, but it just becomes like a normal way of us interacting and they get more used to it. And then like I say, no, you're not. So, and then move right into the next thing. And, or even if something they did was like really small, I just kind of magnify it a little bit, not to draw any attention, but to have positive reinforcement in either that behavior or that like state of being wherever they are. And it's just been helpful, like whether I'm dealing with other students or like even my own supervisor, he's a pharmacist, I work in the pharmacy. He can be very like hard on himself and stuff. And I'll just like stop all of that, you know, or even with some of the patients that I deal with, they might say something, you know, what could look as silly, but is really negative or non-constructive self-talk. Like if they leave the chip card in and it starts beeping and then they forget, they're like, oh, I'm so stupid, I wasn't even like, no, you're not, put your card, we're good, have a good night. That type of thing. And it makes me feel good while I'm in both of these spaces, and it makes them feel good. It makes for whatever it is that we're doing better. Just so, yeah, thank you all for listening.
That is awesome. Black self-respect, definitely. I certainly encourage that anytime that you can compliment and not in like a kind of self-serving, like you're just doing it to try to get over or manipulate someone. But when you can do it and it's nothing to gain, no axe to grind, as they say, just to compliment another black person. I think that is spectacular. And you never know. I think so many black people, they have such a toxic experience being terrorized by whites and a lot of non-white people, unfortunately, all day long, especially on the job, that just that little bit of encouragement, especially if you can get a little bit of encouragement on the job, like, oh man, it can really mean a lot to non-white people. And I'm not surprised that it's been helpful. So absolutely, I would encourage that, just that little bit of positive reinforcement from, particularly to get that from another black person, like, man, that can mean a lot to non-white people. And I think we've had some other people who've said they've had success with that as well. I did want to recommend also that folks really make an effort to practice if you know you have difficulty speaking up to address an issue, or even if you don't have issues speaking up, like you're comfortable, but it might be one specific thing that you are not comfortable, go ahead and practice saying that, like out loud. You can practice saying it to other people. You can practice in the mirror. That way you can hear and see yourself saying whatever it is that you want to say. If it's a situation with the unwanted touching, you know, do not ever touch me in that manner again. You can just practice saying that. And with the move away, I think Emmy talked about that before, so that you snatch away from them at the same time that you're making your comment or what have you. But practice that in advance. I think that can be very, very helpful so that you're comfortable saying it. You can say it in the exact way that you want to, and it'll be a really natural response. Just practice it a few times. You can say it, give yourself maybe a week or so where you just take maybe a few minutes just before you go to work, give it a few times, practice it, say it the exact way that you want to say it. And then if unfortunately the time comes where you have to use the phrase, I think you'll be able to do so in a much more confident manner. Any other folks have commentary they want to make sure they get in, suggestions or situations you want to share?
Actually, can I be heard one more time? I'll make this quick.
Yes, ma'am.
A code that I'm getting ready to practice, I've practiced it, I think maybe twice, maybe three times, but I was developing it while I was practicing, but now I think it's like solidified in how I want to do it, only because my logic says, like, I spend most of my time at work. Actually, all of my time is at work, whether I'm at school or I'm at work. I'm at work. And so if I don't talk about the system of racism, white supremacy, hopefully leading to the importance of codification, I don't really know, outside of when I'm on the cows, when I'd be able to actually, like, spread what I'm trying to, you know, help reach a critical mass, do my part in reaching a critical mass. So I said, okay, how am I going to do this? Like, you know, because I've tried it a couple ways and it was terrible every time. I was not codified whatsoever. So how do I do this in a codified way? And one thing I've practiced that worked was when there was something, all of it centers around someone else bringing it up. Mr. Fuller talks about that. So I just, you know, the importance of being patient, listening, and asking questions. So before my code was, because I had been so terrorized, I don't want to say a similar experience to Dr. Welding, but I think because I talked about racism and white supremacy, I lost, like, I was terrorized, and it was just a very bad experience for me. And I think it had something to do with that as well. So, but I still want to do it, like, I need to do it. So it all centers around being patient, being quiet, asking questions, and eventually it actually does come up, like he said. And then when it comes up, I've been developing the series of questions that I ask to lead to codification, because that's my point. Like, I want to get there. Not so much because non-white people don't respond well when you try to tell them about white people. I've noticed that. So bump all of that. I'm trying to get to the importance of being codified. And then we talk about white people along the way. But then I don't want to get lost in talking about white people. So anyway, in these certain environments, I've done it at the pharmacy and I've done it at school. And white people have been in earshot. But in practice, like, I do say things out loud, practice them, making sure that I'm as articulate and eloquent, or trying to be as articulate and eloquent and professional, classy, specific in my word choice. As Dr. Welding, it actually is effective. And so the first time it's a little shaky, but over time, these individuals, I actually bring it up more. And I still stay in the question lane and then just provide a little feedback to help guide them to, maybe a change of behavior. So I'm not sure if anyone else is out there, because I one time had the code, nope, not talking about it, whatever, I'm not. But I just, for myself, don't know when I'd actually be, you know what I'm saying, now or ever, if that was the case, because all I do is work. So if there's anybody else out there who might be doing something similar, that'd be interesting to hear, like, what's working for you if you do, just because that way I might be able to amalgamate it into my new codification on being able to talk about the system of racism, white supremacy, and the importance of codification, even if I'm at work. But, okay, thank you.
How interesting. Be interesting to see how that evolves. Do we have... any folks who dialed in that we have not heard from, who had commentary?
Have you heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings to all the callers and listeners on the line. I try to call in, Gus, like at the last hour of each program now, because, as I mentioned before, the racists are charging me for this call, and they... I guess they charge, you know, certain people with certain companies, and I try to use the online, free HD it one time when I called in and used that, it was too loud. I remember you were saying that, and so I may try it again in the future, but for now, I'm just going to try to, you know, listen to the program, you know, for the first 2 hours and then call in at the last hour. As far as the woman who is dealing with the unwanted touching and this race soldier. I heard you, Gus, mention about, you know, my no touching policy and whether or not it has worked. I haven't worked actually outside my home for a while, so I haven't had, I guess, a lot of work experience in practicing my code because the no touching code, I implemented it after that. And again, all I've had experience with as far as that is just social situations and white people just getting alarmed by that and asking a bunch of questions and things of that nature. But as far as, you know, her, given that he's not her direct supervisor, what I would do, and, you know, ultimately she has to, you know, or she can, you know, try this out for herself, is I wouldn't talk to him at all if I didn't have to. Only when I had to. I wouldn't touch him under any circumstances. I wouldn't answer any of his questions that are not work-related. I would only deal with him with work-related things, whether it be if he's coming up and asking me or talking to me about stuff that isn't, whether I just walk off or I just don't answer his question or I just don't answer his statement, whatever it might be. As far as the, yes, and definitely I would, you know, report all the stuff that he's doing. And as far as it creating more problems, I, in my view, because I'm very sensitive about a lot of things, but sexual harassment being one of the very, very top. And so in my view, the only, I guess, more problems that you could create that to me would be relevant, anything short of physical violence to me is absolutely irrelevant. So whatever else you do, as far as I'm concerned, it's not as bad as being sexually harassed and sexually terrorized, unless, again, we're talking about physical violence. So that's what I would do. And as far as Red in Nevada, I'm so sick of this race soldier that she keep dealing with. And I wanted to ask Red directly, is it possible for her to just not talk to this person at all? Because it just, all she does, it seems like, is just attack Red all the time. That's the only reason it seems like she even communicates with her. So it's like, if she's not your direct supervisor, Ken, is it feasible for you, first of all, not to answer her, period, if she doesn't call you by her name, by your name, excuse me, and to just not talk to her at all unless absolutely necessary, again, whether it be walking away from her, whatever it might be, even with that lunch thing, one thing you might, you know, be able to do, or I would try at least, is if she came and invited herself, I just, the whole time while we're sitting there, I just wouldn't talk to her. Maybe she'd get, maybe she'll get, I guess, offended enough to where she'll just get up and leave. It's like, look, you can sit here and you can talk to the rest of these people, but I'm not going to say nothing to you, period, the whole time we're here. We on a break. I don't have to say anything to you at this time, if at all. And so I would just avoid her. The same, like, you know, with the other woman, with the man, the race soldier at her job, I would just avoid these people at all costs. And as far as, real quick, the no touching thing, as far as for me, again, like you said, at most a handshake, and even that would not be repetitive. It would only be if absolutely necessary. If I need a job, if we're in a job interview and we're shaking hands to so-called seal the deal or something like that, or if I'm meeting my new supervisor for the first time, I don't even think I'll be shaking these white people's hands, just the coworkers that I meet for the first time. Just if I don't have to touch white people, I would just not do it. And if they ask me about it, hey, you know, I know we shook hands at the job interview or whatever, but for now, you know, now that we're on the job, just to avoid any, just to protect both of us, sexual harassment claims, whatever excuse I had to make up, I would do everything in my power to avoid touching white people. But that's just me. Thanks, Gus, and I'll mute my line.
Red in Nevada, did you want to field that question about, is it possible to greatly minimize your contact with this racist white woman?
Yes, and thank you, HV. And now I've actually tried that. I feel like this particular racist, because I know before, it's like, I feel like she's socially awkward. She might even have some type of learning disability, because she does not function like, I guess, the typical racist white supremacists, like they'll pick up on hints. And I've done that before when, like, cause I had said before, like when she called me whatever name she wanted to call me, I just wouldn't answer, or she would mistake me for another black female, which she's not only done to me, but to another black person at the plantation. It's like, you know, she doesn't pick it up. And then like the next week she'll go back to call me whatever she wants. But unfortunately, like in my work area, she has to pass by me. So that's why I was saying, like, sometimes I get excited when it's like she acts like she doesn't want to talk to me. But then it's like, you know, no, that's not the truth. She'll invite herself and then she'll call me whatever. But I think what I am going to do, like I've heard some people say, is, you know, as soon as she gets to the table, instead of, you know, trying to ignore her, kind of making, I don't feel like she'll pick up on the being uncomfortable, and not saying that she's ignorant. I've tried that and it just doesn't work for long. So I think if she does decide to invite herself, then I'm just going to just leave. I don't know if I'm just going to make up a reason to leave or just pick up and leave, but no, I definitely appreciate it. And I try not to let it get to me. Cause this is, you know, dogs bark, birds chirp, white people practice racism. But no, I appreciate it, and I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Mary, can I ask, do you have to talk to her? Like, even if you say it doesn't work, it sounds like you're saying that she comes back to you and keeps talking to you and keeps doing the same thing. That's fine, but that doesn't mean that you have to respond. Like, is it possible for you, is it feasible for you to just not respond to this woman, like, ever? And if not ever, very, 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 very rarely. Like, is she your supervisor? Or, I mean, because she certainly acts like it.
Well, no, she's not, definitely not my supervisor. We're basically on the same level, but I will try that. And I'll definitely, let everybody know next week. I feel like when I had, there've been like actual days where, like I was saying, like she would then just come up to me and just not even say my name. And that's what she kind of does, during like a break or something. She'll just kind of start talking and look at me in my face, and you know, she'll kind of get eye contact. But I'm going to try it. Sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, to be smart aleck and like to kind of be rude, but I don't want to, I don't think that is necessarily the right way, but I'm going to try, you know, the way that you suggested, and I'll let y'all know if it makes a difference, by next Thursday. But I'll mute my line. Thank you very much, though.
You're welcome. And thanks for answering my questions. I'll mute my line as well.
Context of white supremacy. Updates on workplace racism. That is something, you know, try to get. That way we can see if we switch things up, we can try some things out, do some experimenting, see what works, what doesn't work. Might be helpful. I think a lot of folks over the years have had annoying racist white women on the job in all varieties. Who have caused a lot of damage. So anyone, I think, would appreciate getting code that works and getting them to back up and give you some space. Did other folks have either their own situation, people have figured out some techniques that work? If you have any suggestions for what we have heard thus far this evening, feel free. Line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter. Yes, sir.
Yes, I have experimented with this when it comes to the subject of handshaking. I would ask the person, what am I shaking your hands for? And in a lot of cases, I would not have to participate in that process with that person a whole lot. Because most times, for the most part that I've experienced, and I'm not talking about even when I've been retired from being a firefighter since 2007, 2008. But even recently, in the workplace called education on the high school level, there's people who stuck their hands out in front of me. And it's a very much accepted gesture. Traditional gesture, to whereas where the person that has not stuck their hand out first, it almost is almost like an unseen pressure that you are obligated to extend your hand in retort, in return to that other person. But I've asked the question, what am I shaking your hand? What will I be shaking your hand for this time? Or just what am I shaking your hand for? In most cases, that person would put their hand away or would not answer that question in a logical way. Because a lot of times they're not doing it from the purpose of anything constructive. As I stated before, based on what I have figured with white people especially, a lot of times when they are attempting to shake your hand, they are basically running a test on you to affirm to them that you are acquiescing to whatever non-constructive thing that they want you to participate in, or you've already participated in it, or you would entertain something that is not constructive that they will want you to hear, that sort of thing. So I would suggest to anyone to try that. Ask the question, what am I shaking your hand for? What am I supposed to be shaking your hand for this time? You know, something like that. Thank you.
I have been thinking that might be a shirt. I am not interested in selling any more T-shirts, although many people have asked, and I do still get lots of responses when I wear my counter-racist T-shirt, but that might be a cow's shirt. Dogs bark, birds chirp, white people. That might be a shirt. I would wear it if anybody else. I would wear that to yoga class every day. Any other folks have commentary? Anybody? If we missed anybody, you should speak up now.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, everyone. This is Virginia calling. Thank you, Gus, for your comments earlier in response to my email. Thank you very much. It's appreciated. I have another situation.
Which situation in Virginia? Just to make sure we're all together.
The university with the $500,000.
You got them $500,000, and that's horrendous. But to be dogs bark,
and
birds
that's how
chirp,
you get treated.
There you go.
Yes, it's unfortunate. But my question is about irritating white women in this lunch situation, because I have a situation like that, and I'd love for some comments or some help with this. One of my colleagues insists on asking me to lunch at least once a week. And it's very uncomfortable because, you know, sometimes I can say no, but other times I feel like I have to go. And of course, it becomes a tacky interaction. So maybe somebody has some thoughts on, other than just simply saying no every time, how you can deal with people who are just trying to invade your personal space by, you know, getting you to have lunch or getting you to go out after work or just trying to interact with you in this tacky manner. Maybe some folks have some feedback for that, because that's another situation that I'm dealing with too. So thanks for any comments on that.
That's interesting. I know our black mom in Michigan, that's one that came up with her, with white women specifically. She was working in an office environment, and she, At one point, I think she adjusted her code. At one point, she didn't do the lunches at all. That's many of our listeners' take. If you're in a work situation where you can do that without penalty, absolutely. Never do lunch. Eat by yourself, eat in your car, whatever. You don't need to eat with race soldiers. She's eventually, I think she concluded, she speculated that she may have had problems, including being terminated from a job or let go, because she was not eating with these white women. In fact, she felt like this white woman wanted her to lower her suspicions so that, you know, she didn't think of this white woman as a racist. And because she wouldn't do that, you know, like, oh, yeah, we'll just, you know, get rid of her. And so we talked about maybe adjusting the code. Maybe you go once a month, you go to lunch, like you don't turn them down every time, but you don't go every time either. That sort of thing. I also think when you go out to participate, I think some other folks have talked about taking away some of the fun. Racists, they love to have fun mistreating black people. We're going to take away some of the enjoyment. You can do some of that just by asking questions while you're out in these meals. Now, I don't know how it deviates to getting tacky, But I would make sure that we're just not going to have, you know, frivolous chit-chat conversation at the luncheon. It would not just be, you know, careless banter, especially once I feel like this is taking a turn for the tacky. Like, oh, yeah, like I would be thinking of questions that I could ask that, oh, yeah, they might even reconsider how often they want to come out and do the lunch thing because they're not going to just get to have fun and be tacky. Do other folks have specific, I guess, techniques that you might implement during the lunch, during the exchange to stop the tackiness?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know what you typically do for lunch, but I think one great thing to do for lunch is just really use it as downtime, quiet time, reading time, prayer time, meditation time, and not, and, you know, make it like that. So if she, you know, continuously asks you, you could just be honest about that. Like, if that's what you do, I don't want to ever do lunch because I use my lunch time to de-stress, to meditate, to relax, to just be alone in my thoughts, and just let that, and no one can get mad at you for that. You're not under any obligation to give away your, what's supposed to be your break during the workday, and you need that break. And you can even say that, like, I use that so that the second part of the day, I'm refreshed and capable of doing all that I need to do to be an outstanding employee. I think that way you just eliminate it all the way together. She might still ask for a little bit, but, you know, you could just say, hey, that's my mental time or whatever it is, however you would want to phrase it. But that might work.
Thank you. That's a really good suggestion. Sometimes what I do at lunchtime is go to the gym. So if there's a day that I've already planned to go to the gym, I can say to her, you know, oh, I'm going to the gym at lunchtime, or, you know, there's some excuse. But it's interesting. She's just persistent with it. So even if I say no two times in a row, she'll still come to me the following week. It's very strange. I don't know how to deal with it. I'll mute.
Whites do keep tabs on their negras. I think that has been a big thing for the program this evening and for the past 9 years to be expected. And that's one of the ways that they're keeping tabs, going out to lunch and just collecting information. They get to ask questions and observe, pay attention to what type of jewelry, how much it looks like you spend on your wardrobe, that sort of thing. Just being nosy, snooping, gathering information about their negras. Any other suggestions on how to deal with this lunchtime invasion? Theft of time and energy, really.
Gus, can I ask a question? Sorry.
Stacy from the UK pops up out of nowhere. I guess if it's still a 5-hour time difference, is it 2:19 a.m. UK Friday morning?
Precisely.
Right on.
I do have a story to share, but I'll share it afterwards. I was just wondering, to the last caller, what do you think she's after? And that follows on from your point, Gus, because anybody who's that persistent, there's usually some kind of agenda. So I guess my question is, what do you think, if anything, she's after? Have you got a project that you're working on that she might be interested in taking over? Or, you know, is there something about you that she particularly wants? Because that's just, I don't know, it just sounds a bit bizarre to me, that level of persistence. And, you know, somebody who's trying to undermine you in particular usually wraps it up in a whole load of niceness. So that's my question. What do you think she's after?
That's a great question. I think she's definitely trying to get information. I think she's trying to get advice and expertise. I've been there longer than she has. She also reports to a non-white Black female. So she sometimes seems to be trying to pump me for information for how to deal with this person that she reports to. So I think there's some racist suspect behavior, you know, intel that she's trying to gather from me. And that's when it feels tacky. because it certainly feels like she's trying to get some information. So I think you're spot on there, Stacey.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I guess it's just, unfortunately, years worth of experience that, and I guess this is a general one for most people listening. I think in that instance, obviously, if she's trying to work out how to engage with her manager, then she's, you know, in the advice situation. I'd just be cautious anyway, because you'll end up being put in the middle of a situation, and maybe a way to minimize her interactions with you is to not give her that advice. And I don't mean in a way that's being unhelpful, but or that can come across as you being unhelpful, but actually you just don't want to be in the middle of any kind of conflict with, or any situation where she's trying to undermine her manager or whatever her agenda is, which you may not be given the full, you know, she might not reveal her full intentions to you, but I would just be very cautious. So in that instance, I'd, you know, even if you're forced, in inverted commas, to go along to lunches, at least for a period of time where you're exiting and trying to get out of that arrangement, I would say very little and make it an unproductive lunch session for her, and just or fire questions back at her all the time just to make sure that you're not in the middle of a situation. But in general, you know, it's that paying attention and that false niceness. Usually there's an agenda behind it, and I think sometimes if we just are mindful that even the things that you may not think are people are interested in or want to take over, whether it's a project or anything else, I'd, you know, in general, just minimize your enthusiasm for any project you're working on, even if it's the most exciting project in the world to you. I think anything that seems, you know, you can seem very interested in or excited about usually sparks some kind of envy or jealousy, or just a nasty, you know, people just want to undermine you, and even, you know, it just becomes something that people get attracted to. So I would, as a way of having some level of code in an organization, I just minimize the way in which you talk about the work that you do, because I think that attracts a lot of nasty attention, and people use that against you. But I'll stop there, Gus, just in case anybody wants to add anything.
Is this white chick one of the ones that you were competing against for the physical year money contest? Is she one of the ones you're beating, or no?
Yes, I'm beating her.
Oh, man.
She's a colleague in that manner. Yes, you're right.
An opponent, enemy combatant. That's how she sees it. And if folks recall the line from the ISIS papers, the way when she talks about sports metaphors and Arthur Ashe, the legend Arthur Ashe, and Jimmy Connors, and who's a suspected race soldier, and saying that it was life and death the way he viewed it. And it was just a game. Like, they view everything as life, death, white genetic annihilation. So it's way beyond just the little physical year competition thing. But they, you know, especially do not like seeing niggers beat them. So I would be real, real cautious in dealing with her. And what you, that's another one, what I said before, every time any conversation with her, I would just assume it's going to be recorded, transcript, everything. And I mean, it's so many things to worry about in terms of her trying to sabotage. She might be in on the group trying to sabotage you getting this credit for this $500,000 gift for the university. And then who knows what plot she might have designed for her black supervisor. And if she can get you involved in that and get some chaos there, like, just, oh man, like, yeah, I would be real, real careful. In fact, I probably wouldn't have a whole lot to say. I would be pretty quiet, asking questions and, you know, really, really precise with my word choice in speaking with her. Super, super dangerous white woman.
Thank you.
Any other suggestions how to deal with the lunch dilemma?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. HV.
Yes, no, I, and I'm not calling you, ma'am. Gus, I'm talking to the caller. First of all, I wanted to commend you on your $500,000, $500,000 gift that you accomplished, and I commend you. I think that's incredible. I wanted to ask why, or what about, you know, no thank you makes you uncomfortable in this situation, especially with a person who has been hostile to you?
Well, this particular woman is not hostile to me, but I don't mind saying no thank you every once in a while, but I feel like if I say no thank you all the time, then I would appear to be the hostile one. So I want to say yes just every once in a while, just to be collegial. And maybe I need to think about that code, because I think what Gus is saying is correct and what Stacy is saying is correct. So I just have to decide for myself if, you know, if it would be detrimental to me to just completely shut her down all of the time, because she is persistent.
Okay. Well, one thing that I thought of from what I've heard on this program over the years, if you stick with no, you could, you know, tell her that you don't, I guess, do things that are not work related. You like to keep things very professional, very business-like, just so that you can keep focused. You don't want anything to distract you from the job, anything that might occur outside of work. Because, I mean, that has gone really, really badly. Sometimes alcohol is involved, and it just gets really crazy. And sometimes people get fired from things that have happened off the job. It's just, you know, that is, you know, gone really bad, and that can actually, or badly rather, and that can be really dangerous. And so, you know, that's a reason that you could give. I also thought that, you know, what everybody has said is great, and what any brought up, I thought that was brilliant. And I'll leave my line.
I don't think she's persistent. I think she's very dangerous. And I think you should operate with that in mind. I don't think she's being tacky. I think she's just got a very clear agenda. And eventually, if she will reveal it to you. So I guess, yeah, and it's difficult, because I think the question is correct in terms of why are you hesitant in telling her no, but at the same time I understand completely why you'd be hesitant in telling her no. And I think sometimes we because we're so afraid of the hostile reactions, regardless of what we do, that there is some kind of penalty for us, but you know, there is some level of benefit in standing up for yourself as well. I mean, whether it's in this situation or other situations as well, because these are the times when you feel powerless, and you can start to internalize, and these things start to affect us in different ways.
Is everybody still on the line? It got really silent.
Are you still with us, Stacy? I can. Can you, Stacy? Are you still with us? Stacy, still with us? Not hearing you. Not hearing you. Are you there, Stacy? She might have got disconnected. I will see. I will see if I can ring her back in if we lost her. Yep. Okay, I will try to add her back in. Tech difficulties.
Can I say something else in the meantime, or should I wait?
Feel free.
Oh, I was just going to say, also, I mean, I know that, you know, you're a non-white person, and so this can be kind of difficult, but I think that it may be possible to turn what she's doing back on her as her being the hostile one, because after you've politely declined over and over, she continues to you know, keep up their behavior and keep asking you and asking you and asking you, that's actually harassment. And it's like if that were a male continuing to ask you, you know, to go to lunch or whatever, and you kept saying, no, you know, what's the situation? So why should she be treated any differently? And even if it's not like a matter of sexual harassment, you know, with a person who is of the same gender, just harassment in general. And I don't think that you should have to be put up with that. And that can be hostile as well, just the harassment. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there and unmute my line.
Appreciate that.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Appreciate that, HV. I'm still trying to dial Stacy. It's not worked thus far for whatever reason. I don't know if her connection is a little spotty right now or whatever the case, but I'll try again to see if we can get Stacy back on so she can finish her point in the last few minutes before we shut down. The number again, 641-715-3640 and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I know that's when folks have grappled with for some time the lunch aspect, and even how much do you talk about yourselves on the job? Do you decline every time and just permanently? I don't ever do lunch. And whether or not that could result in a penalty, I think that always comes up when the holiday party time, about December-ish, Thanksgiving, when they start having those holiday parties and people have to make that same decision. If I don't go to this holiday party, is that going to impact my bonus? Is that going to impact me promotion time, review time, whatever the case? Do I have to make an appearance? Do I have to show face at least for 30 minutes? I think a lot of people end up having to invest some mental energy making a decision on that. Other folks, I'll try Stacy again. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share, either commentary on what's the situation from our caller in Virginia, or if you had any other comments, suggestions you wanted to make sure you got in.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus, callers and listeners. My advice, I go through the same thing, getting invited out to happy hour, of course, and to lunch. What I try to do is usually decline. I decline most of the time, but I'll accept maybe a brief lunch during work just to, you know, ask questions while I'm out. I usually drive the narrative, especially if there's a small group. I usually try to drive the narrative, ask questions about their colleges, you know, what, you know, their campus was like. You just try to ask anything that hopefully doesn't go tacky, you know, burn a little bit of time, eat something, and then, you know, get right back to work. Hey, guys, got to go. And that's pretty much it. I try to say yes. Maybe they ask me about 5 times, maybe the 6th time. It's just a short, quick, brief lunch. Drive the narratives, ask the questions. If they're asking questions that are too personal, honestly, I'll just lie or make something up, lead them in a completely wrong direction. And even if they realize it, then they'll say, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I went too far, but I, you know, I don't have a problem with not, you know, sharing things about myself or just saying something that, you know, I'm just making up just because. So that's just my advice. It's been working for me so far. And Gus, just wanted to say I'm starting up yoga tomorrow. So appreciate all the advice and how that's been benefiting you. Thanks. You online.
Wow, that's great. Like, I don't know if you're going to have to endure doing it around a lot of whites, but it is spectacular, has lots of great health benefits. I'm a huge, huge advocate of doing yoga either privately at home or studio someplace where you can practice safely, but big, big advocate. It's been great.
Can I be heard?
Thomas in New York. Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers. Just had a man. I was invited last week. They had this run that the accounting firm does, and these guys. Ever since I started, they've been they got a Vitamix and they've been mixing up stuff and trying to get in shape for this this event. So I just thought it was very interesting that, you know, man, we need you to race. We need you to be in this. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm not running. So this thing was Friday, so they all got to leave early. And, so after this tax season, it's supposedly a bar event. They expect everyone to show up. So I'm not going.
It's a lot of wind on your line?
I apologize, Gus. I'm outside. Let me get to a place where I'm blocked by the wind. I'm shielded.
Okay.
Hold on.
Yes, sir.
I apologize. I'm walking.
Understand.
But either way, is this better?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So like I was saying, they had a race at the job, and it was some type of race, and they were all excited and been working out for this race since I started there. They got a Vitamix, and after I cut the fruit, these guys take their cups and blend it up and are making these protein shakes and trying to get in shape so they could not win the race. They just don't want to come in last place again. So either way, they didn't come in last place. This year, they ended up beating out a bunch of kids, little kids, who were in the race, but they had special rules for the kids. But either way, I got out of that. Told them, I don't run, but it's expected for everyone to go to this event at the end of the tax season that they have every year at a bar, and, everything is catered, and everyone's just been raving about this event and talking about it since I started. So I'm already decided that I'm not going, so I'm going to have my excuses. My excuses generally, I have something to do with my kids, can't make it, I've been, like I said, I have this lady that I work with who I assume is my boss. She's the owner's secretary. However, she's not officially anyone's boss, but she seems to be everyone's boss. And she has been terrorizing me since I started. And, either way, she has this sense of entitlement, per se. One thing that I hate when she does this, I'm generally cutting the food up and I'm rinsing stuff off, and she'll come and just turn the sink off. And it's like a habit maybe for her, but it's just, and then she'll pour, like if she's pouring out coffee or something, she'll pour it right on the food, so it's like, I don't know why she does that, but she always has, something smart to say. I say, you're rinsing the water, but how am I supposed to rinse the food off? So today I asked her, well, how would you do it? So she turned the water on, put the food in the colander, and then just let the water splash on them, and then said, that's it. And I'm thinking, this is how these people are, these people are disgusting. But either way, she's been an ongoing problem. So one of my coworkers, who she's not white, she's not black, she can't pass for black, she can't pass for white, I would assume she's closest to, say, a Mexican. She was yelled at by this lady. She has two very prominent, if you hear the wind, I'm sorry, it's about to stop. She has two very prominent partners. And she's overworked, so the receptionist helps her out when this happens. And this lady who terrorizes everyone, she wanted the receptionist to do something for her that was very menial. And she said, no, I can't do that right now because of I'm doing this for, this lady who has this issue. So all of a sudden, she runs over to this girl, and this is what I catch. She starts yelling at her, you're not to give someone else your work. And she was very nasty. So, like I told you, they have hired a new lady to be the CEO. So this girl goes to that lady. And however, this new CEO said that won't be tolerated, had a talk with the lady who's been terrorizing everyone. And, she's been walking around with a chip on her shoulder, but very quiet ever since. That's my only report from the plantation. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Wow. Another dangerous white woman. She'll be looking for vengeance, I'm sure. Wow. The white women. That's been a major theme for this evening as well. I've seen so much of that. I think people who've heard me over the years know I'm in Seattle, Washington area, and that so-called environmentalism and all that, that's a big deal out here. And you have lots of whites that go out and protest about, you know, the water or the trees or the frogs, the salamanders, or, you know, whatever the deal is, the pipeline and all that. So the white women come in and fuss about the water. Oh my gosh, Thomas, you're wasting all this water and, you know, all that nonsense. Like, ugh. Any excuse to practice racism, white supremacy, and particularly where I can come in and boss around another non-white person, waste their time, make it difficult for them to get things done. I think he had said that before, like the whites would come in and steal the fruit before he even got it prepped to get out on the tray. And then it makes it kind of, or it could give the impression that he did not purchase as much produce as the money that they gave him would allow. So maybe he, you know, skimmed a little bit off the top and stiffed them on their produce. But
now check it out. I'm sorry, but they accuse me of the opposite. Now they're saying I'm getting too much food, which makes me think the guy whose job I replaced, he was stiffing them on their cash. They're saying I'm getting too much. And how come there's so much fruit left over every day? And I'm like, I don't, you know, I just get the amount that, you know, the $60 buys. And they're like, oh, my God. I mean, you know, and then he came to me again, and he was very angry. Man, didn't I tell you last time, don't buy so much fruit? So I said, well, wait a minute. Now, they give me a certain amount of money to buy the fruit with. I try to make sure that I get that whole amount. Well, maybe I'm going to speak to them so we can get less money then. So I said, okay, no problem. So they didn't change my money amount. So the next day I had the same amount. So he came back to me and said the same thing. And then the next day after that, he came and apologized to me and said that, you know, he grew up poor. And he hates to see stuff like that go to waste. And, you know, you really need to get less. But he's trying to make sure I get less food. But until the lady who gives me the money says something different, I'm going to still do the same thing. I don't want them to think I'm stiffing them on their money.
Wow. That's another one I would get receipt. In fact, that's one I would get the receipt. And then for everybody that's got all the 21st century gadgetry, I would go ahead and take a photo, put that in the cloud in case anything happens. That way you got all your documentation in case any accusations come up. And I would save them, like, as long as I had that job. I would just have all those receipts stored up. That way, if any 6 months, a year down the line, somebody would, on that day, there were only 5 bananas, and I know we gave you $60, so I know you stole, like, yep, got all that documented, cover, and I would do exactly what you said. Like, they told me, here's the 60, spend it on the fruit. If they give me less money, I will do so, you know, exactly. And any excuse. I grew up poor. I stumped my toe this morning. The Lakers lost. Any excuse to abuse and be nasty and discourteous to a black person. And the same thing, that's been a huge theme. All of these white supervisors, everybody coming to tell you how to wash the fruit, how much fruit to buy. Were you here? What time did you get here for lunch? You're not even my supervisor. And you're coming and doing all these check-ins. That right there, and just in my view, that right there tells you the white perspective. I'm white. It doesn't matter if I'm a woman, if I'm a male, if I'm transgender, if I'm transitioning, if I'm gay, if I'm lesbian, if I'm a child, if I'm in Zimbabwe, if I'm in Canada. If I'm classified as white, I can tell any of these niggers what to do anytime I want to. I'm boss. Anywhere in the world, if they're not white, especially if they're black, I am boss. That's the way I'm supposed to relate to them at any time, any place, regardless of what their title is or anything else. I am supposed to be able to tell them what to do. That is my God-given right as a race soldier. Like, just from this program alone, how many people have talked about that? People that are not their whites who are not their supervisor coming up to, you know, give them orders on all kinds of things. Appreciate that, Thomas and New York. Any other suggestions folks want to make sure they get in, comments they want to make sure they get in? I'll try Stacy in the UK one more time.
Hi, guys.
Oh, we got her back. Right on.
Yeah, sorry, I cut out. I can't remember where I didn't even realize I got cut off. So
it was very early in your commentary when you were talking to our caller in Virginia about the saying no and what her... this white woman's objective is and why she's doing all this. It was very early in that.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, I wouldn't consider her to be tacky or persistent. I think she's dangerous. And so I would just limit what I say. I'd be careful just saying out and out no to her, because she's got an agenda for definite, and she'll probably turn around and use it against you. But if you make those conversations unproductive, she'll get bored eventually. I did want to give a little update. Not to do with the situation that I'm dealing with. There's no change there, really. But you are reading The Hate You Give as part of the book club. And the author, Angie Thomas, is it?
Yep.
Yeah, she's obviously been doing her book. Why is there a cowboy? Oh, because of the book. She's been doing her tour, and so she was in the UK last year, and she did a talk at the organisation where I work. And at first, I couldn't work out why there was such a, and I still can't really, but why such a big focus on her book and why this is just sort of this excitement. But anyway, there was an she did do a talk. Lots of people came, internal people attended, but also people externally came along, and it was organised by her publisher. And she had provided lots of copies of her book. And as staff, you know, they were, I asked for a copy because I was interested. At that point, I didn't actually know too much about the sort of details of the book, but I just generally had an idea of what the story was about, and she gave her presentation. And the person who organised the event was a racist, I was about to say suspected, she's not suspected, she's a racist female. And she made a point of ensuring that I wasn't given a copy of these books. Now, why she's really interested in it, I don't know, because given that I'm very sure that she is a racist suspect, or rather a racist, I can't imagine why this book is of any real benefit to her. What I did do is I thought I'm not going to make a fuss of it, because I'm not going to give anybody any inclination that they're getting the better of me. You know, the book was for free. If I really wanted it, I was going to go and purchase it myself. I decided, that was my intention anyway. I just didn't get around to it because I had, I've got lots of books that I've bought or ordered, and I haven't had a chance to read them yet. And actually now listening to the book club, I don't think I will purchase it. It's not one that I want to read again afterwards, yeah. But I just thought I'd link both programs, Workplace Racism and also your book club. And I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Beautiful. I can. And that says a whole lot right there. Like, might even use that for the introduction for tomorrow's book club, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, The Hate You Give, study session number 3. I can totally understand why racists would fly a black female halfway around the world to give a talk in Europe about that book. Totally understand. And why. And that's even more significant that they would work deliberately to make sure, oh no, don't give Stacy a copy of this book. Why? She came all the way over here. Why would it be some difficulty in getting her a copy of the book? That's just me judging the content. If people don't think it's content related, you know, feel free. But that stands out. And just what was the reason that your organization had her come? Like, what did she talk about? Did she just talk about the book?
Yeah, she was talking about the book. I mean, because of the organisation that I work for, I mean, I won't go into too much detail, but we do get lots of people who will write in because they want to engage on different issues. But actually, I think it's particularly bizarre because I couldn't work out why they entertained it, because we do get thousands of requests for people to use the building, engage with senior managers, et cetera. And we usually say no. We find reasons to say no because we can't accommodate everybody for a start. And for me, even a year ago, not knowing anything about her, why it was even entertained, it's still peculiar to me. I mean, we do work which will touch on these issues. I work in a political organisation, just to give a little bit of context, but there is no reason why that particular person, the book, or anything should have been entertained above all the other thousands of requests that we get. So it's bizarre to me. I can't really answer. Sometimes we do, you know, accommodate things, but there's usually an agenda to follow. I have no idea. And I'm surprised as well that, you know, as was mentioned on the previous two book clubs, that book is being made into a film so early on. And it's clearly she's been given a lot of attention because she was flown over to the UK. I was due to have a follow-up meeting with her publishers, but then I decided not to do it for other reasons. But it doesn't make enough sense to me. I'll meet my line there, Gus.
Fascinating. Wow. Context of white supremacy, local, national, global system of white supremacy. My submission will be, and anyone who's heard the first 2 weeks of the book club that we've done, my submission would be race soldiers worldwide. They always love a good minstrel show. And I would submit that every page is weed smoking, black people shooting, being killed, cursing. I mean, what's not to love? And sexually sewering a black female, what's not to love? I mean, minstrel show at work, and then we can get the author to come all the way over here and talk to us about weed smoking Negroes in America out doing their gangsterism and drug selling. Oh, this is the best day ever. Like, more tea and biscuits. Any other folks have commentary before we wrap things up? Last few moments. Everybody satisfied?
No.
Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to comment. I forgot to add this. Just two things. With the white woman, recently there was like an email that was sent out, just like a congratulatory email, and it had my name in it. And this is why I'm trying to maybe help to better describe why I feel like she's not a regular, or I still feel like she's a suspected racist, but she's kind of different. But I was clearly speaking to someone else, and she was like, she came over, said, "Oh, congratulations," of course, insert wrong name. And I just so happened to say thank you to this other person. And she's like, "Oh, you're welcome." I'm not looking at her or anything. So that's why I'm like, I'm trying real hard not to say that, you know, her intelligence level is down, but she's just not, I don't know what's wrong with her really. But I just wanted to touch on something that Emmy said about all jobs having like the sexual harassment training. This is actually the first job, and I've said this before, but this is actually the plantation that I'm working at. The first one that didn't have like that tacky video or anything like that. I feel like there was something in the handbook, but it wasn't necessarily something that was really brought to everyone's attention. Like I said, like with every other job that I've had, they had a little video or something like that, and just an extra confirmation even after, you know, you decide to accept the job offer. There was something else, but I'm not seeing any of that. And I can kind of understand why, because people's, they're real touchy feely. And so I just, you know, for the most part, just try to keep to myself. But I actually see it. There's like different couches in different areas. And I saw like one person like sitting up on the couch and then the other person like laying on their belly across the couch. And with their, I think their head was in the other person's lap. I'm like, this seems incorrect. But I just wanted to let that be known. And I don't work in any type of seedy type of adult type of place just because I'm in Nevada. But I just wanted to say that. I don't know if that's like maybe just here or it might even be a trend. I'll meet my line.
I think the entire city and state, or the city of Vegas and the state of Nevada, is seedy enough that that probably has infected quite a bit that happens throughout that region. But wow, anything like that, like I would be really, really cautious if people are lounging around like that in a work environment. Like even if that's, you know, even if they were married, let's say, I mean, like, wow, like that's, yeah, I would be very protective of my personal space in that environment. Like no touching. As for the white woman, I guess I would just say that, you know, even if she, they have some people that might have some sort of mental problem, what have you, or she might be socially awkward or what have you. Some of the folks that have like Asperger's or some of the other syndromes that they talk about, where you have some difficulty functioning socially. All of that notwithstanding, I strongly suspect, just based on her insistence on mispronouncing your name, she is not confused or defective in her ability to practice racism. That's what I would keep in the forefront as you continue with her assessment about whatever else might be wrong with her or not. With that, we will wrap. We should be here tomorrow for the previously mentioned The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. This is session number 3. I think we're picking up on chapter 7, if my memory is correct. We're pretty early in the book. I think only 2 black people have been killed thus far. Who knows what will happen down the rest of the text. I'm super interested in just studying this book. This is not a book that I'm reading because I'm in love with it or I think it's wonderful storytelling. This is a book that I'm reading to study racists, and particularly given that information that Stacy just shared, like, wow. Racists all over the world are gloating about this text. And you can, I mean, if you think Panther is doing something great, I don't know if this will get as much hype as that, but I'm pretty sure if you got this many legions of young people who've been forced to read this book in school, it will probably do pretty well. It'll probably get a good bit of attention when the movie comes out. So we will be well-armed, well-prepared tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have thoughts, feedback on what you heard in the archives, this broadcast, any of the other programs, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Drop questions, suggestions, guest ideas, gripes, let me know. If you have workplace racism related content, just put that in the subject and I can share it on the program. Many thanks to all the folks who dialed in, listened. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy this Thursday evening dash Friday morning. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I know racists, they have committed a lot of damage, taken a lot of advantage of non-white people who were not able to think to the best of our ability because we were intoxicated and got us full of whites, narcotics, and poisons. I know Dr. Welsing and many of the other folks that we esteem, they would strongly recommend that we do everything we can to remain sober, preserve our brain computers so that we can think clearly and make phenomenal decisions, crank out some new ideas, fresh concepts to permanently solve the problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. That's it. Oh, and buckle up each and every time you are in a vehicle. I still, non-white people that I'm around, still see them out and about. No seatbelt. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. Buckle up, driver or passenger. Buckle up each and every time you're in your vehicle. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.